Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon to make sure once again, even though it has been snowing and the pavement outside your house, JB, is lethal.
It is lethal, isn't it?
Really is. You made it here, Phil? Got your crampons on?
Yes, got some trail shoes on with some good grips.
Ooh, wonderful.
Nice. I almost couldn't get into my car because the door was frozen shut.
Well, we're here, and we make sure there's a podcast for you 52 weeks of the year, every Monday morning. Sometimes more than one podcast. Extra content as well if you go to patreon.com/eggchasers.
So will be this week?
Yes, there will be this week, and lots to talk about on this podcast. Lots of good rugby to talk about. Lots of really interesting stories off the field to get into as well, which we will. So he's at Jay Beardmore, I'm at Cocker, we're at Rugby Podcast. patreon.com/eggchasers, and...
Yeah, all that good stuff. Let's start with this. Blackburn, who we went to watch this week, pumped York 49-24.
Oh, we should have been there.
We could have been there for that glorious victory.
Can't believe it.
We might not have got back across the Pennines, though, so maybe for the best.
Yeah, there's been some really interesting results, but we'll talk about them later. Yeah. Oh, and also, shout out to Neil Sherrod, who wants to send me results from Yorkshire, so we can really expand this segment.
Oh yeah, love a bit of local rugby.
Yeah.
So Simon Cowgill got in touch, Dale as well. In fact, Dale Newton, a bunch of other people got in touch to mention a bit of commentary today. Was it today?
I've heard some really disturbing rumours about this. Yes,
it was today. It was back in the BT Sports studio at halftime in the Sale versus Saracens game, and is a bit of analysis from Lawrence Dallaglio.
Wow,
that's
unfair. If that's not in the laws already, it should be in the laws.
Well, I did see Saracens skirting very close to the wind, sailing very close to the wind today. Not to mix a metaphor, of course. With is that Scorpion Rock that they're operating with now? So building a brick wall on the field is
building a brick wall.
I mean, if you think about their history of bending the laws, I think a brick wall is well within their reach.
Is that wall now going to be owned by Voon Prop Limited?
I'd imagine so.
Yeah, they've probably got some really good property experience in that squad.
Yeah, exactly.
If they know how to get a wall built in and around the St Albans area, they will build it.
Exactly. Yeah, well spotted, Lawrence.
Well spotted, Lawrence. And also got another one here. Another one for the literally jail. Which I'm just going to find. We get so many emails. It's genuinely, I love it. It's contacteggchasers@gmail.com.
It's really hit a nerve, hasn't it?
Well, no, it's not just this. There's emails on all sorts of stuff, and we're always welcome for your correspondence. Kirk Hullis, long-time listener. Good to hear from you. He says, one for the album. And here we go. YouTube advert. So this is a comedian, Morgana Robinson on Dave. Oh.
Why don't you have a premium account? I can't believe... A man of your means!
Here we go.
Anyway, so I just thought I'm going to fuck it. And I just...
Excuse the language.
I had no choice. So I ran across like sort of these rocks, the gnarly, slippery rocks, and I slipped. And I fell about 20 feet down the side of these cliffs, and I landed on my face. I came up, and all the boys were screaming like girls. And they were like, Don't worry, it's fine. You still look like you. It's okay. And I looked down and I had quite literally cheese grated my whole body.
Wow. That sounds horrific.
Oh, that would be awful.
That sounds horrific.
Sadistic.
One of my favourite things about reading the emails is when you open up our email account, it's got just the first line of all of them, and it so many just say, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Really enjoying the pod, blah, blah, blah.
Because they know we're not going to read out any fawning whatsoever. Fawning.
We should, though. We should actually only read out the most fawny ones.
Yeah.
There's an incredibly thorough few emails on the subject of Leicester fly halves.
Yeah.
Martin Lewis suggested Rhys Patchell one.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout, actually. Really good shout. Lazowski's been mentioned a lot this week. But here's how thorough our segment was on Leicester fly halves. Someone from Tigers said we hit all the right names. So there we go.
Interesting.
It's very thorough.
We mentioned almost every name in world rugby at one point or another.
But all we seem to have done a good job. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to do any of that, but they're looking at all the same names.
And so if you missed out on, if you don't know what we're talking about and you want to know who Leicester might be in the market for, go back and listen to last week's podcast.
Second rows, mate. They're just going to buy more second rows and stick with Freddie Burns. Listen to me. I know what I'm talking about.
One more email before we get stuck in. This is from Patrick Burke, and I thought Phil might appreciate this one. He says, hi, gents. If I'm emailing, you already know I love the pod. No need to say it. Quite right. I even watched you lift a few trophies at North Dorset.
There you go. All of them.
I'm a huge espresso fan and was entirely vindicated on last week's pod as I've been saving for a dark green
Marzocca Mini Fiorentina edition.
There you go. For a while. They're on a par with Takalua's calves for form and function. Rugby has been going... I think this is genuinely a great point. Rugby's been going an espresso chic route for a while now. Manu, Jamie George, Elliot Daly, etc. All obsessed with flowery latte art. If I were trying to get players over to my club to replace the gaping hole left by a recently departed fly half, I'd make damn sure my training ground was equipped with the finest espresso machines available.
Oh, yeah.
Vittoria, Arduino, Black Eagles, ideally. That's good, I take it, Phil?
I don't know.
You look that up.
I'm going to look it up.
I actually thought that was a team. read it again, and then put against Bath.
Lines right up with modern approaches to coaching. Less rugby, more emotion, more mindfulness, more caffeine. And it swerves. There's no limit on what you can spend on coffee machines in the salary cap.
No, very good point.
Now, can I just say, on the coffee machine, we have spoken a lot about the coffee machine. But we have neglected what I think is actually the more important component of the coffee. Well, it's not more important, but just as important, is the vessel you drink your coffee from. Like, if I have the wrong coffee cup to go with the wrong type of coffee, it ruins the whole experience. I love a nice, thick espresso cup.
You like a thick, short espresso cup, but thick china, don't you?
Exactly. Now, there's an actual word for that. I can't remember what the word is for that. That type of cup, I will find out and let you know next week.
Well, it is a good point because Hazelwood, the London Irish training ground, I've gone and done some filming there and spent a day there, and a brilliant training ground. And the players have got a great coffee machine, which is good. I will say, I had to have instant coffee in one of those polystyrene cups.
Yeah, they do that. They did do that.
Dreadful.
They used to. It's the only time I like having that is a Bovril. I think a Bovril just suits that kind of mug, but anything else.
You've got a point there, because you wouldn't drink certain types of beverages from, you know, as they say, you wouldn't drink champagne from a mug.
Yes.
And I don't think you should drink Bovril from a mug. It should be polystyrene.
Yeah,
it should adds things to
the experience. Get on that mic a little bit more.
There we go.
Lift it up to you.
I will do.
Raise it up a little bit. There you go.
Yeah, say all these have a really weird system in the main canteen at Carrington, where if you used a spoon, you had to sort of wedge the spoon into the grate, like the water tray. You had to wedge the spoon in into the gate, so it stood up and
so
drained.
It's erect.
Yeah, so the teaspoon is erect for the next person to use to stir their tea.
Interesting.
Yeah. and then the players would go downstairs and they'd have their own little coffee machine.
Good. As long as the players are sorted out, that's a great point. There you go. If salary cap, every conceivable advantage. If I was a player, that would be something I would. That would come into my consideration on judging where to play my games.
Yeah,
definitely.
Coffee with the boys after training.
And as Patrick Burke says, if you've got a Vittoria Arduino Black Eagle coffee machine, which, looking it up, is a professional 2 or 3 group head, 10 to 15 grand bit of kit, then That would be quite a nice place to make your coffee.
Wouldn't it just? I'm not sure I'd trust those yobs with one of those.
I think
only senior players can touch it.
Most of the players are basically trained baristas now. Certainly higher end than most of the baristas that burn my milk every now and again.
Bloody hell, one of the best coffee shops in Manchester is owned by two rugby league players.
Yeah, yes. Pot Kettle Black.
Yeah. So there we go. Yeah, that's the thing. If you make it to the senior leadership squad, you can use the senior coffee machine. Other than that, you're not allowed to
touch
it.
You get the Vittoria, whatever
you
that
is. You get a little card, a little pass.
Yeah. So the big story this week, let's start there, is the, well, I'm going to say it, fantastic change to the eligibility rules which World Rugby have brought in. And this, to me, feels like a very un-World Rugby thing to have done. Very forward-thinking. They normally do things which protect the status and the success of Tier 1 nations.
I do. There are losers from this. There might be some substantial losers from it. I'm for it.
Scotland? No, actually, what am I talking about, Scotland? Because that's...
Potentially.
No, because they just get the excess South Africans who were never going to play for South Africa anyway.
No. Maybe Scotland then. So, the way I look at it is, yes.
Let's tell them what's happened. So what's happened is, if you haven't heard, I'm sure you have. If you love your rugby enough to listen to this, you'll be across it. But World Rugby have allowed any player who has qualified by residence for a nation to be able to revert back.
No, not just
it's
that.
Not just qualified not just by residence. You could have dual nationality. Or quad nationality. Yeah. Because it goes to grandparents. Well, yeah, quad nationality or quad eligibility. Yeah. If you play for one of those through the traditional eligibility routes or through location factors, following a 3-year stand down, now you will be able to revert to not the country that you qualified through residency, but one of your birth, your parents' birth, or your grandparents' birth.
Yeah. So, in essence, your second shot at international would be aligned with your original international criteria minus the residency rules.
Yes.
That's correct. How you look at it. Now, that sounds great, and I loved all
with a 3-year
stand-up. 3 years.
Yeah. 3 years, which
it sounds like a lot, but it's nothing really.
Well, the problem is, if you've played for one country, most of these guys will be late 20s or early 30s to have played for one country, moved there. They've got sufficient distance behind them to recognise that they're not going to play for that country again, and then the 3 years. It's so guys like Fekitoa and Sir Charles, who are late 20s or early 30s, it'd be guys of that kind of age.
Yeah, well, they're ready to go. They're ready to be signed now, I think.
Yeah, those guys are actually ready to be signed, but it is when they're 30s. There'll be relatively few people in their early 20s who this will affect.
So the main beneficiaries, the main potential beneficiaries is going to be the Pacific Island nations.
Maybe.
You would think.
Maybe.
Probably.
Because at young ages, they represent, Nathan Hughes represented England, Fekitoa, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Rokodoguni, Noe Nakatasi, Vakatawa.
I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced on the following basis. So, I was watching the absolute hysteria on Twitter. Hysteria is not quite the right word.
I love not being on Twitter.
But people were saying,
I retweet my local butcher, and that's all I've done in the last week.
But they were saying things like, "This is it. This wasn't normal Twitter idiocy. This is people being genuine. This is people saying this is going to be great for the Pacific Island nations." I think that is a rather mainstream view, and I'm not convinced because the Pacific Island nations are still going to have the same issues they've always had. Players not getting paid, lack of organisation, lack of coaching, lack of time together. That's not going to change. The only thing that has changed now are the incentives to the players not to play for another country. So if you were a proud Fijian and you grew up wanting to play for Fiji, for instance, you'd have a dilemma, which is you can play for England, now you're here through residence, or you can play for Fiji. Well, that barrier has gone now. So I actually think you're going to get more people, if they design their career correctly, coming over to the big leagues, France and England, early doors, because they get two shots.
It's now a 5-year period of residency now, not 3.
Yeah.
That is correct, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So for residency.
Yeah.
So but that doesn't apply if you move I think prior to your 18th birthday.
Yeah,
there are shorter, and if part of your schooling is in another country,
right. Which, so we could have some there's already been unintended consequences with French clubs taking South African teenagers.
Setting up
academies,
but bringing them over age 17 to avoid exactly what you're talking about.
But as they should do, because the most important thing for that player is to make a living out of rugby. If you want to be a professional rugby player, it's not for everybody. Okay, you've got to make that decision. Is professional rugby for me? If you want to go down that route, you've got to make as much money as possible. You can't do it in the Pacific Island Nations. You've got to go overseas. That's just a fact of life.
Oh, that is absolutely the fact of life for an individual. Here's my counterpoint to that, which is this isn't a player's concern. This is an administrative concern. The way to have every one of those players earning the most amount of money they can is to have the most popular game you can, and the way you have the most popular game you can, and this is what you work back from, is you have a World Cup in 12 years to or 10 years time, World Cup 2031 in the USA, let's say you have 10 teams that can realistically go and win that, then you've got a marketable product which advertisers will pay through the nose for, which will filter down and mean you get really top leagues which players all get paid for. That's an administrative one that's long term. Short term, you're absolutely right, players have just got to make coin.
Yeah, they've got to make money ASAP. Now, I actually think that it will benefit the Pacific Island Nations, and I think that's really cool. So, massively in favour of it. The other thing that I think is going to happen is we're going to see a lot more movements between Tier 1, and we've also made it a situation now where, for the first time ever, and I love this, players have bargaining power over their union. So, it used to be the case that, hey, you want to play in a World Cup? Well, we pay X amount. And if you want to play for us, you're going to have to accept X amount. You know, for England, it could be 25 grand or 20 grand or 18 grand or whatever the figure is now. For Wales, it'd be substantially less. But you didn't have a choice. If you wanted to play for that team, you had to accept whatever match fee was on the table. Well, they've made a market for these players. So if I'm playing in England and I've kind of got a... I'm kind of on the radar for Wales, well, I could potentially say, okay, yeah, I'll come and play for you because that will jeopardise my EQP status, which might jeopardise my next contract. But I'm not happy with your 10 grand match fee. I want a 15k match fee. I also want some guarantee that I'll be in your elite squad for the next 6 years, because that player could be the missing piece to the jigsaw to win the World Cup or get out of the group stage. And I think that they're going to be able to have some significant bargaining power, and they should use it.
Particularly when they're in a system like Wales, Scotland or Ireland, let's say, where the unions fund the clubs.
Yes, yeah, exactly right. So going back, they'd have a lot of power. Now, coming the other way, you might see players just say, right, I did play for Wales, but my dad is English. I intend to step down now from playing for Wales forever. Mind you, they would have to. Oh, no, they wouldn't have to, would they? Because they could be on a 70 cap rule. So you can have an Alan Wynne-Jones, right? And say he's got some English heritage. He could come over and say, yeah, I'm no longer available for Wales because now I'm EQP. Boom. So don't even need to play for the nation in question.
No Welshman.
He wouldn't become an
EQP. I would do it.
He wouldn't become an EQP for 3 years.
Yeah, but I intend to.
Yeah,
No Welshman who gets a significant number of caps for Wales is going to do that. Let's just be honest.
I don't know.
You would. You would.
Have you got any French heritage, JB?
Oh, I wish. I wish. I tell you what, Carl Ferns would have played for France at the drop of a hat.
Well, Armitage, the two Armitage boys, Stefan
and Delon,
I think almost did. They explored that route, didn't they?
Yeah, and also people don't, you know, if you're happy in the regions and you're happy in Wales, then yeah, of course you wouldn't. But a lot of people leave the regions not particularly happy. You know, not everyone is happy with Welsh rugby. Not everyone's happy with English rugby. Chris Horseman played for Wales purely because he's so unhappy with the way he was treated by English rugby and how well Welsh rugby treated him.
Mm.
So I think there's going to be loads of movement. And also I think it's going to mean that particularly players in Australia and New Zealand and South Africa are going to come over to the UK much, much earlier. Much earlier, particularly if they can immediately play for England, Scotland, Wales, France.
Yeah, I can see at the early end of the career, it almost incentivizes you from chasing the residency, let's call it, early on in your career. There are only so many international spots available for these guys. You cannot possibly have hundreds of people in any international elite squad. And the back, so there is a risk of that. I think the risk is relatively low on the in the scheme of things. And certainly the benefit for those players who, like Feketor and Pietau, are two of the best examples, they make an immediate difference to, well, whatever team they play in. They are world-class outside backs. So that is great news for Tonga.
Just aside on Fiji, is there any Fijian heritage individual you can think of right now who would improve the current Fiji squad? Because it seems to me they've got the house in order pretty nicely, as it happens.
Nathan Hughes would be one that I mentioned. He must be coming. He must be eligible soon.
Yeah,
Hang on, but who would Nathan Hughes... Who's in his position at the moment?
Tuisui.
Tuisui's ace.
Yeah, no, he's great, but it would improve their squad.
Bill Matter.
Yeah.
Bill Matter will start, so it's just options. They might chuck Nathan Hughes in at second row.
Would he be second row? Or would he be second row slash eight?
Second row slash eight.
Slash centre.
Yeah.
Or who's the number eight slash centre? Is it Yarta?
Batia.
Lavani Batia, yeah.
I'm not entirely sure there's that many Fijians to come back into the Fiji side.
Possibly.
But there's other, like, Vakatawa, Nakatasi.
Yes.
Raka. Put those three boys into any back line. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
They are class.
It's outrageous. And also, I think what we're going to see, I don't begrudge the first when I say these two, we will see that there is a financial incentive, which I totally get, and I would do the same thing if I was in many of those players' shoes. If I was in Vakatawa's shoes, look, he's done incredibly well by being a French international.
Yeah.
And his family he'll be able to support his kids and have a good life as a consequence.
Is it Vakatawa or Raka who is actually French? Like, through and through French. One of them is actually... Because I remember World Rugby getting very annoyed by one of them. One of them came over from Fiji, one of them is French as French as baguettes.
I'm not sure.
Don't know. I know Vakatawa played... for the Sevens for a few years. He was like on Racing's books, then played Sevens,
And Vakatawa also put a French shirt on his mum's coffin.
Interesting.
So he does like.
Okay,
France.
Fine. Well, I apologise to Vakatawa if that is the case. But the point is, you got the financial incentive on the one hand. What we're going to be able to see is and this is the heart, not the head. This is the thing that I love international rugby for, and the reason why I hated project players and I hate residential qualification. I'm happier with it being 5 years, but still not happy, is you're going to see that the heart. And I think if Manu Tuilagi or the Vunipola brothers, if they had the chance to play for Samoa or Tonga before they retired, that would mean everything to them.
Well, yeah, it would do. It'd be awesome. It'd be awesome. I wonder how many players would get a taste of life not in the lap of luxury of England and think, ooh, maybe not. Maybe not.
Billy and Mako. Billy was born in Australia.
Sorry, Billy, Mako and Faletau when he joins them as well.
Well, Billy is eligible for, obviously, Tonga, but also Australia.
Oh, my word.
Mako is eligible for New Zealand because that's where they were born.
I tell you what, I don't think Mako is getting into New Zealand, but Billy could quite easily get into Australia for the next World Cup. Could he? When was last time he was picked?
No, he played in the last year.
Yeah, he played in the Six Nations this year, so he just missed the next World Cup.
Oh,
so he missed the World Cup, so it's not.
Yeah,
so
I'd pay for him to go.
It wouldn't be worth his time.
There's loads though. I was thinking of some of the weird ones, like someone like Scott Spedding going to play for South Africa for the next World Cup.
How old would Scott Spedding be?
He'd be 37 at the time of the next World Cup.
He's an occasional reporter for BT Sport. You'll see him, I imagine, in the French game. Well, because it's really hard to get anyone out to France. Yeah.
So awesome. would Spedding take the place of François Steyn?
François Steyn,
yeah.
38-year-old François Steyn.
Yes.
Done in by 37-year-old Scott Spedding.
Well, we got a brilliant email from Will Butcher, who says, Egg Chasers, love the pod, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I was wondering what country you're predicting to be the biggest beneficiaries of the change in player eligibility, and if there's maybe five players that will be the first cabs off the rank. So we've already talked about some, but here's one that I did not consider, but is a brilliant shout. He says, just to kick you off with the longest of long shots, how about Jake Paledry? He returns from injury, starts to build his awesome form, only to realise his recovery has taken longer than expected. I mean, he's already been out for over a year.
Yeah.
Maybe it might be. I don't know when he last played for Italy.
Every cloud, eh?
Yeah. So, not been playing for Italy. He played in the World Cup. That's probably the last time.
He would become eligible for England in time for the World Cup.
Mm. What, and they need him.
That's an interesting
The last game he played was November last year. So he would be available for England's... just in time for England's 20... Oh, no, no, this is a long shot. So, no, he would only be eligible for a World Cup final.
What a... Wow.
An injury cover for the World Cup final. Would that... I mean, there you go.
Well, nice research.
But he's still very young, though, isn't he?
Still relative, yeah.
Mid-20s.
Mid to late 20s.
Now,
he's got time on his side.
Who would be the biggest beneficiary? Might well be Italy. There are a lot of Argentines out there who would like to play for Italy, I'd imagine.
A good shout.
Mm.
A lot.
Italy could be a good beneficiary. And then someone like Doggers, for example, could potentially, I know he's in England camp but never actually played, could play for England and then switch across.
Do you know who it won't benefit from what I can see? Georgia. I can't imagine many. There's not like many Georgians.
Well, there's a few who've played for France.
So who are the ones who played for France?
Yashvili's.
Yeah. So a lock. The lock and the scrum half, because I think that was the brother combo.
Was there a prop as well, Yashvili? But he might have. I think one of the brothers might have actually played for Georgia.
Oh, maybe. Yes, I think you're right. I think you're right. He might have even been captain of Georgia.
Yeah.
So
there'll be a few because of the historic links from Georgia to France, the top 14.
Here's one for you, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe.
There you go. Now we're talking. David Pocock out of retirement. Out of international wilderness to play for Zimbabwe.
I've always spoke to Don Armand and he sent me a smiley emoji face. So that means he's definitely he's in. So,
Don Armand, Dave Ewers.
Yeah. Well, Dave Ewers is... Never had an England cap.
Yeah.
He's good to go.
He's uncapped.
Yeah. Maybe Dave Ewers plays for Zimbabwe and then England.
that's an incredible back row.
Yeah.
Majority comes back. But actually, someone has updated me with actual real names who are currently playing. There must be loads in South Africa. Loads. Sadly, I think that number is diminishing. I don't think we'll ever really see a strong Zimbabwe team again because I don't think they're playing that much rugby over there.
They were in the first World Cup.
Yeah, well, it was a different place then.
It was a very different place then.
So, was it under Ian Smith that they played? The Prime Minister, not the coach. I don't think he did both.
No idea.
He might have done both.
Maybe he did. Maybe
Romania and Zimbabwe were in the first World Cup.
Romania? No, I can't see them.
And when Romania did quite well in the first World Cup, or gave a good account of themselves, there were calls for them to join the Five Nations, and it was turned down. Romania went, well... There's political reasons behind it. Went a very different route.
Well,
but that's why they brought Italy in. And there's been a lot of chat this week about Italy should be bombed out of the Six Nations after their Autumn Nations.
Not if they get some handy Argentines in there. And the last one would be just on Romania. Weren't they playing rugby because Ceausescu? Is it Ceausescu?
Yeah.
Loved rugby.
He loved rugby,
and it was an army sport.
Have you seen their stash back in the '80s?
No, was it good?
Oh.
Do they have Adidas stash
at one
point?
Adidas stash.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to find it for you.
So there you go. Eligibility laws covered.
So, I think I can't help but think, I might be wrong in this, but I can't help but think that the biggest beneficiary long term will be some of the Pacific Islands because of just the sheer number of Pacific Islanders who are playing for the nations. If Fiji got back some of the guys I mentioned before, Nathan Hughes, Rocco Duguni, Vakatawa, Nakatasi, Alvaretti, Raka, Sevu Reese, Kurindrani, Karevi.
Yeah, okay.
Korobetti.
Korobetti, yes.
I mean, just there. And they're not going to be able to play them all.
But do you know what they need? They need Vincent Cock.
True.
These are not the players that they really need. Korobetti. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
They really don't. Joshua Sobers perfectly good. They need, probably like a Courtney Laws, a Vincent Cock. They need people like that.
Yeah, a couple of tight head props.
Kitsoff.
If you could...
Kitsoff and Cock. If they can get those two boys, they're in business, aren't they?
Well, if you could... I'm not sure they've got too much Fijian heritage.
I don't know.
They might do.
You've got to ask the question, haven't you?
Exactly.
You've got to ask the question, how are you going to know?
I'll just show you the Romania stash in 87.
Yes, that colour.
It's exactly like the French kit, but in Romanian.
Do you remember playing rugby with the Romanian under-18s?
Yes. Chucking the ball around.
Did you?
That's absolutely lovely. Yeah. We finished the Georgia-Romania game, went back to right behind the stadium to like a pavilion-y type thing, and there's a load of guys playing rugby. Not rugby, but you know, the...
Just chucking the ball around.
Chucking the ball about. But do that game where I pass it to you, and then the second ball comes to you. You throw the ball up and then pass it across. We were playing that with the Romanian youths.
Yeah.
From their under-18s.
Have you played against any other... you suddenly popped into my head that I've forgotten I did it. I played against the Uruguay under-21s.
Were they any good?
Awesome.
They were all right. We gave them a good game. It was playing for... Was that playing for Berkshire or was that Newbury?
Was that your time residing in Montevideo?
Yeah. When I was hanging out in Montevideo.
Ah, nice.
No, but they... All I know is when the game finished, they were... desperate for any stash. They were swapping all of their stash. They were like, what have you got? They were
awesome.
It was like a barter.
Send them my way.
They came into the dressing room and they were just like, what have you got? What shirts have you got? I'll swap, give you that for that. They were loving it.
Love that. Phil, you've played against Poland, haven't you?
No, not played against Poland. I didn't actually play because unsurprisingly, I was injured. But I went on a...
Love this story.
A tour to Poland in... God, when was it? 2003 or 2004, about 19, with the uni team. And we played two games. We played Olsztyn, which was not the nicest area, middle of nowhere, little town that was like in a walled town that was, the town itself, the centre was beautiful. And then as soon as you got outside the walls,
the outskirts of Verona, awful.
Well, it was like something from Hostel. It was crazy. Their team were all right, but nothing amazing. And then we were, so on day five of a five-day rugby tour, boozing it up all over the show, we played against a team from Warsaw, and they were legit. They were like a semi-professional team. We were on a five-day bender, and it was just one-way traffic. This was middle of December. It's about minus 10 in the stadium as well. No one wanted to be playing on the pitch. And it was like, it was 100 points to nil.
I heard they were like Polish under-21s or something.
Yeah, I think a few of them were like very high level, yeah. But then, one of the weirdest things, so this was in a quite a big stadium on the outskirts of Warsaw, but their clubhouse wasn't in the stadium. It was in the little bar next door, which just happened to be a part-time gay bar.
Really?
There was actually like dancing cages in there as well.
Amazing.
That was very good fun.
Awesome.
And we had a few good beers with them afterwards as well, which was the most important thing.
I mean, the image in my head is of 15 Dolph Lundgrens out of Rocky IV.
Yeah, except more steroids.
Less blonde, more steroids. Yeah. Imagine that.
As for the rugby this weekend, what game stood out to you that you enjoyed?
All of them. I loved this weekend. Well, actually,
great, wasn't it?
The worst game. Well, this game was about the players and the fans. It wasn't about me, but I will talk about my predictions quickly. I lost two games. One was Sale. I can't believe that Sale did what they did. In fact, we can talk about that in detail because I've got some thoughts. And credit to Worcester. I mean, it was a bit of a flyer. But to go up to Newcastle, stay over there for an extended period of time and get a draw.
Yeah.
Newcastle bloody good and they're organised. Yeah. That's really encouraging.
In those conditions as well, which suited Newcastle far more than it suited Worcester. And for Finn Smith to slot that conversion from the touchline in those conditions with that much pressure, fair play.
Yeah, pressure from Worcester and also from Leicester. Because that's going to really ratchet up his price.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched how much you caught of Quins against Irish, but I've said it a few times before, and you saw it this time. I know from when Nick played at Irish that it's the one game of the year they want to win, and Irish was so up for it.
Thing is, I don't think this is an accident. So I rated Irish to start with, and then I loathed them for a little bit because they were letting me down. But I feel they're getting their act together now. I really do think they're going in the right direction. A draw against Sale, maybe that's not that impressive, bearing in mind what we saw today. A draw against Saracens, which is quite impressive, bearing in mind what we saw today. And also a win at Sandy Park, followed by a win at the Champions. That's serious.
They've improved significantly. It feels like everything's kind of slotting into place. They just couldn't quite get it right early on. And they had all those nearlies, the draws. They're on three draws already this season. Our nine games, which is remarkable.
Three draws. Is it two victories?
Two wins and four losses, yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, draws are still draws. You know, they're not wins. But things are slightly differently for these guys, and they are looking really good.
Yeah.
I think from when I, from what I saw, Quins will definitely come away thinking they should have won. They left quite a few points out on the park. Mm. But fair play, Irish.
Yeah, it's a Quins thing, right? It's a Quins thing that, you know, you run that risk, you score a lot of points, but you're a little bit leaky. And the other thing as well, they did this with, well, they're missing Smith, they're missing Donbrand, they're missing Liner, they're missing a few lads. Now, everyone's missing lads at some point. Everyone is. They still did relatively well. Relatively well.
They still did well. Quins, even missing those players, will be disappointed. Disappointed not to convert some of the chances they had and not to get the points when they were on offer. But Irish, fair play. And one of the things that impressed me most about Irish was the way that they were organised around their driving maul. So their set-piece game, which Augustine Creevy obviously has been riding recently to score numerous tries. But that looked great. And that's a sign of a cohesive team.
Oh, some of the driving maul setups for Saracens today were brilliant. I tell you what, I tell you who's got great driving maul setups, and credit to them, Ultram Kurzel. seriously, Ultram Kurzel. And the reason that's important, do you know who their coach is? You do know who he is.
It is.
Briggsy?
No, it's not Briggsy.
Close.
It's not Briggsy. I know it's a former Sale.
No, current Sale player.
Current Sale. It's not Horse, is it? Because he was Bowden.
He just goes for the cash.
Yeah.
Ultram Kurzel is Cam Neild.
Okay.
Their scrum was on point for part of the game.
Mark Quato's old club as well.
Oh, yeah, true. For part of the game. But honestly, their driving more setups were absolutely brilliant. Their movement, the way they brought the ball down, the quickness of the ball, really, really good. Now, on the driving ball, there is something.
This is a specific Ultram Kurzel.
Or a general point.
This is a general point about Premiership now.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams, a lot of directors of rugby, it sort of clicked in their head, which is, Christ, I might not be as good as I think I am. Let's go back to driving mauls, because at least we have a guaranteed source of something there.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're seeing, and also the weather's turning too.
Yeah, yeah.
But
this weekend particularly, it helps.
I think it's really, really important for teams. And I think a lot of directors of rugby have had a huge shock as to what they're good at, what they're not good at. So I said on our WhatsApp group the other day, these directors of rugby are absolute frauds. Look at the amount of guys that are just not doing a good job. Everyone is beating everyone else. So the guys who are legit at the moment, Mark McCall, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Borthwick,
100%.
Yeah.
Dean Richards?
Yes.
Yes, because he works, because of the limited range expense of what he works with. Yeah.
Who else?
Who's going great guns at the moment? There must be someone good in Harlequins. Now, it's not Tobias Matson, but they must have someone must know what they're doing.
So I actually think this is exactly the example which sort of proves the point, which is they don't have anyone, and it's just about the players.
And they've got some amazing players.
Yeah, like players are the ones that win you the game, and then, you know, if you've got a good DOR on top of that, maybe you can go for it. It's like Rob Baxter this year, obviously still a great DOR.
He's a brilliant DOR.
You know, whatever he's doing has been found out.
He's struggling this year. And I think with Exeter, we've spoke about it in the past few weeks, so I don't want to go over it too much, but I think there is a combination of factors. There's the law change. There's every other team wants to be up to beat Exeter, because even though they didn't win it last season, they were double champions within whatever it is, the last 18 months. And then the player injuries.
I'll give you another one.
Player injuries and the fly half shirt.
I'll give you two more.
Joe Simmons is either a fullback or on the bench at the minute.
Yeah, which is weird. I thought it was just temporary, but it looks like it's not.
Well, I wonder if this is because they missed the boat with Slade. Mm. So they had Slade, who was meant to be the next great 10, next great English 10, and they didn't quite make it work with him. And eventually he was fullback, and then 12, and then he's finally settled at 13, and he's a brilliant 13, undroppable at 13, even for England.
Mm.
Skinner looks a lot like Slade to me. A lot like Slade. He's a little bit smaller, but he's a sort of same wiry kind of player.
But it's quite rare to go from not just being in a team, but skippering and being the fulcrum of a European and Premiership winning side to 15 or on the bench.
There's got to be.
Yeah, on the periphery.
Well, one thing we know about this for a fact, is that Baxter will have really solid, strong reasons for it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just like an accident. There's going to be some real thought behind why he's not liking Simmons.
No, and I loved Phil's perspective, you know, before it became more and more clear that this is just on purely on merit and nothing else from in Rob Baxter's mind is when Phil said a few months ago or a couple of months back, perhaps it's because he recognises you're going to need to have two players who can play that position. Steeno's gone and Skinner's going to need to get up to speed. If Simmons dropped out in a European Cup semi-final, you need to know you've got game time under your belt in your number two. So he's given him game time early in the season, which would be a very Rob Baxter thing to do.
It would be.
It would be.
We're more than a third of the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does look less and less likely. It will be interesting to see when we get close to the business end of the season who wears that shirt. Because I'd still probably put money on Joe Simmons, which would kind of prove my point.
I would love to know what the thinking is.
Although Rob Baxter has said like they can't afford to lose many more games.
No, and if they lost against Bath, it'd be battle stations.
Yeah.
Proper battle stations. Yeah. Now, just two other coaches who are legitimate. Gloucester, can't remember his name now.
Skivington.
It must be ace.
I mean, yeah, my prediction on them for the season was so off. I did not expect them to improve as rapidly as they have.
Yeah, me neither.
And Blackett.
I've got a lot of time for Lee Blackett.
And the reason I say Blackett in particular is because the teams are playing well, seem to be trending towards a certain way, don't they? So Gloucester, you can see, look a little bit like Leicester Light.
Yeah, coordinated pack.
Yeah, Leicester. I think Saracens are now probably the better team in the Premiership because they've got the coordination and they've got a load of other things. The reason I like what Blackett does is because it's completely different. Mm-hmm. Completely different. That said, had some great forward-dominated tries this weekend.
The team that Wasps put on the field this weekend against Gloucester was actually a decent team. That said, if any other club had the amount of injuries to senior players that Wasps have had and are currently experiencing, I don't think many other clubs would manage to cope as well as Wasps have. I'm amazed at the players they've got out and how they've managed to still stay competitive. One plus point, though, is the return of Alfie Barbary. That was good.
Yes, yeah. Exciting.
Here's the interesting. I mean, it's not that interesting. You probably know this anyway. But I always think of Alfie Barbary as a hooker. But according to people I know, and I won't say any more than that, Jones and Wasps coaching team have sat down and he is a number eight now.
I read that quote.
Oh, cool. Okay,
there,
good.
Yeah, there was a quote saying that there was a conversation between, I think, the three of them, Barbary, Blackett and Eddie Jones, and the agreement was back row.
Yeah. So,
which
also, do you like that?
What, the three of them are discussing it?
No. Yes, I guess, but he's going to back row.
There must be something he's not at the required level for hooker.
Yeah, scrimmaging and lineouts.
Yeah, that must be it.
That must be it, right? But, okay, so let's just say he is now going to be...
But those things you would think are the elements you can develop.
Well, yes, and that's... yeah, I agree with you completely. So my worry is not so much he can't scrimmage or throw into lineout. But I then wonder, like, how good is he? Because we're going, oh my God, he's good. Look at him carry a ball. But I think, is he that much better than Aka van der Merwe or Luke Cowan-Dickie if you just told them to show pony off the back of a like scrum? Because they'd both be devastating if you just said, look, you don't need to jump in the line out. You don't need to push in a scrum. You don't need to throw in. But here is a ball. Run as hard as you can.
No, he's more than that. There's something special. And it's the reason I love Don Brandt is the same reason I think Alfie Barbary is such a talent, is because he just has a knack. And Rafi Quirk, is in his short time, has got the same knack. He just appears to read the game that bit better and he's that much more natural. So he just happens to always be in the right place at the right time.
And then manhandles people.
Yeah.
And then manhandles people.
Barbary's about manhandling people.
I think it is both. Yeah,
he
is both.
He played, so I think we spoke about this before, but he played hooker at age grade for England. But before that, do you know what position he played?
Centre.
Yes.
Outside centre.
I think both, but yeah, he played centre when he was younger. Which obviously I don't think he's ever been small. I think he's always been a fairly big lad.
So yeah, I asked all this. How big is he? Because I don't think he's big enough to play eight for England.
He's not, I don't think he's that tall. I think he's listed at 6'1". And
I'm definitely taller than him. I've stood next to him.
Oh, really? Have you weighed him?
And he had studs in. I haven't. I mean, it wouldn't be appropriate for me. I mean, I'd love to. You're a man of the match again. Can I pick you up? Of course, the COVID rules get in the way of that. So hopefully, when the COVID rules are all gone and I can stand next to a player and shake their hand and stuff, I'll weigh him.
So do we think he's... I mean, do you think it's a fair comparison to say he's like... So I think it's very fair to say he is somewhere between Simmons and Luke Howard-Dickie as a player.
We're just looking at his...
Stature.
The way he plays the game.
Yeah.
What am I missing there?
I think if I had to fuse him, it would be Luke Cowan-Dickie meets Alex Dombrandt.
He's not big enough, though, is he?
No, you have to forget the physical frame. Okay. He reads the game and plays in that natural... He just arrives in places and tracks lines like Dombrandt, but he's a specimen like...
Because the way he manhandles people does remind me of Cowan-Dickie big time. That's why it's in my mind. That if I brought Luke Cowan-Dickie into the back row at eight, he'd be dynamite. Absolute dynamite. And he has no other responsibilities.
So he is, according to the weight I've got here, he's taller and heavier than Luke Cowan-Dickie.
Is he?
Yeah.
What's he listed as?
So Luke Cowan-Dickie is 6 foot and 111. I'm just trying to get a... 111. So Cowan-Dickie is 6 foot and 111 kg.
Which is about 17 stone.
And Barbary is 6'1", so an inch taller, and 116 kg.
That's massive.
So five kg heavier.
I take it all back.
And he's only 21.
Yeah. So
he will fill out.
When I think of a number eight, I think of someone who's about 6'4", 120 kilograms, yeah, and is called the Marlon. I mean, that's kind of, that is, and if it's not that, it's not really... I'm not really into it.
Yeah, someone like Pickamoles.
Oh, stop it.
Billy. I mean, Billy's 130 kilos.
Parisi.
Oh, Parisi.
Yeah, that's what I want. Even something slightly smaller like a Faletau. I'm into that too.
No, I want number eight. I don't want them to play like him, but I want number eights to look like Pierre Spiess. He is the benchmark number eight for me.
Yes, that's a great
physical specimen.
Yeah. Or Parisi had that. That small waist, massive thighs, massive chest, huge shoulders.
Actually, this reminds me, Phil, you talking like that. We did have a suggestion that we should have an occasional or regular feature instead of a man of the match or player of the match or whatever. We have a big, strong boy of the week.
Oh, yes.
Because you use that phrase, he's a big, strong boy. Oh. I think you've even used it referring to Alfie Barbary. He's a big, strong boy.
He is a big, strong boy, judging by those stats.
I've definitely referred to Alfie Barbary as a big, strong boy a few times.
It does tell you a few things about how we perceive men, that when we hear that a 17 stone, when we hear the word 17 stone, we go, yeah, he's too light.
Yeah, not that big.
He's too small. 17 stone's bloody massive.
Yeah, 17 stone is massive, especially when you're talking 17 stone and like 7% body fat.
I mean, massive for an accountant, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Sale Sharks today.
Okay.
Because I think this is a really good game. Not necessarily because of Sale Sharks. I thought Saracens were outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. And I thought Billy looks every inch the international eight. Just talking about international eights before, I haven't seen a number eight play that well for any nation or any club for a good while.
I thought he was out for longer. I thought he was injured and out for, till Christmas or even the new year.
No.
I was surprised when I saw him in the team sheet and he looked great. And to be able to do it for 80 minutes as he has been doing.
Just everything he did. Like, there's so much about Saracens which was just pure quality today. I tell you, the other guy who I thought was brilliant, because of his job, he wasn't a major impact on the game, but when he was called up to do something, he did it every time, is, how do you say it, Sagan?
Shagan. Ratemi Shagan.
Yeah. He hits like a hammer. So Sale came down his wing 3 or 4 times in the same phase of play, and he just smashed boys for fun. Then when he gets the ball, he makes a good handful of yards. That's exactly what he should be doing.
And his kick chase, obviously, that is a big part of his job in conditions like this weekend and the way that Saracens were playing. He did it brilliantly.
Yeah.
His kick chase was awesome.
Mario was out of this world. His line-out work is just something else. Like, if you don't get your line-outs absolutely spot on, and Sale got some big jumpers in JP and...
Lude.
If it's not spot on, I mean, those guys are big, tall lads who you can hit at the top of their jump. Anything below that, Mario is taking. He's taking. He took one from behind, and he took one just in front of Lude when they were going for a driving ball. His speed off the ground is truly elite. Like, it's different levels to everyone else.
And his wingspan.
His
as
wingspan.
Well.
Just brilliant.
Because he's nowhere near as tall as Lude or JP Dupree.
He's not as big.
He's just not as tall. But he is. His reading, his athleticism, and his wingspan.
Talking about tiny waist and big shoulders, though. Oh my God, he's an unbelievable specimen.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
Yeah, no.
Mario Itoje's brilliant.
This is what people come to the podcast for. Listen, guys, Mario Itoje's good at rugby.
Yeah, sometimes, though, it's too easy to say, oh, Mario's so good without actually explaining why he's so good. I just thought he was. I mean, him and Billy today. It's easy, isn't it? Oh, yeah, they're world class. That's why they're world class.
Yeah.
That's why they're world class.
It's not a weak Saracens team, but it's not the strongest team that Saracens can put out. And for most of the game, actually, weirdly, until the red card when Sale actually kicked into life, Saracens, they never looked like they were going to run away with it and score 50 points, but they always looked comfortable. They always were playing the game in the right areas of the pitch. They knew they could force turnover and force mistakes out of that Sale team, and they could get points when they needed to.
Yeah, as for Sale... they did not look at the... No, it's not they weren't at the races. Maybe they were at the races too much, as their director of rugby says. Maybe they were too emotional. And I wonder, you know, do you know when people say about kids or, you know, or say about other people, like, you know, are they okay? You know, check they're okay. Are they okay? And you ask if you're not okay or you're told you're not okay enough, you end up not being okay. Like, oh, that must be the reason.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, exactly. The more you talk about emotion, right, in your press conferences, do you not think that might eventually... have a knock on, we weren't emotionally there. Then Byron McGuigan blows up, like, for the most ridiculous thing.
He was, at that moment in time, almost too emotional.
Yeah, you might say too emotional. Like, let's not focus on the emotion, because this is, you know, it doesn't get you anywhere. And that's how they looked. They looked like they were rushed, and they looked a bit frenetic. They just didn't look good at all. The Byron McGuigan incident's really interesting. Because a lot of people say, oh, aren't Saracens absolute shithouses? Aren't they good at, you know, winding people up? And the answer is, yeah. The whole point of it is you don't react.
Yeah.
Like, that is, they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to do that, and they should do that. And, you know, the character comes in, not by chastising Saracens, the character comes in by not reacting to what they're doing. That's exactly what
but
you should be...
Everyone does that. If you watch the Worcester-Newcastle game, not long to go, Mike Brown clearing a kick from his... No, sorry, it's right at the end of the first half. Mike Brown clearing a kick from his own 22. He gets charged down. Worcester pick it up. Ashley Beck picks it up and scores. And four or five Worcester players, like, pat Mike Brown on the head.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's cost Newcastle a try. He's given Worcester a
well
try.
Well done, fella. Well done, fella.
Yeah, everyone will do it. Yeah. You go to level 8, everyone will do that.
We're
kind
warned
of thing.
About that sort of stuff, Phil.
Everyone will do
like
it.
They're actually stricter on us at level 8 than they are in the Premiership about tapping the people
but
on the head.
As I love the phrase, and there is a big difference, is that challenging situations don't build character, they reveal character. And
yes.
and that is a test for you. You get people goading you.
Yeah.
That reveals your character, keep you cool.
And Byron, that was so
friend
stupid.
Friend of the pod, a Phil stand-in on occasion. We love Byron.
Yeah.
Awesome. B-Max.
He's a brilliant lad. Inexcusable behaviour.
Yeah, he must be kicking himself for that.
Yeah,
because it was,
and he'll be his own biggest critic there. But my word, like, you know, that's what Saracens do. They put pressure on you until you break, and that's exactly what happened. Like, Sale did look like a Saracens light, and I'd love to know who came up with the game plan today. You know, if I'm thinking of how am I going to beat Saracens, oh, I know, I'll run my big runners. What about? 1-2 men out from the ruck? They'll never cope with that. I mean, this is a team that's beat Exeter. They have beat Exeter actually. They beat Leinster. They beat Toulouse. Do you think they can't handle
everyone?
Yeah. Do you think they can't handle a one out runner? I mean, this can't be it. This can't be it. And yet, that was it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Lions. But you've got to. They didn't dominate the breakdown in any way. Even when they had two curries on, they didn't affect the breakdown. And as for the set piece, I am starting to. Why don't you start Harrison? I would have started Harrison every day of the week there.
Yeah, and it's actually an interesting one that obviously Bevanrod has got the calls, particularly since Sanderson's come in. Harrison for years has been one of the most underrated performers in the Premiership.
Yeah.
And one of the most consistent when Sale didn't have the options that they currently have in the front row.
He was the only one for a while.
Yeah, he was doing 80 minutes every week.
Yeah, he was doing 80 minutes every week. And I think there's a few guys who, obviously with Mako being away for the recent internationals. Marla and Genge both isolating. Benno Urbano being injured. Mm. There's a couple of guys who have been Premiership stalwarts for years who arguably should have had a shot before Bevan Rudd. Now, Bevan Rudd played well, but over the long period of time, someone like Harrison, someone like Alex Waller, or the two boys at Exeter who admittedly have had call-ups separately, Hepburn and Moon, you'd argue all of those could be the earlier cab off the rank than Bevan.
Bevan Rudd strikes me as a guy who can scrimmage on occasion, and this sounds like damning with faint praise. I actually find it remarkable, given his size, that they win any scrums. And it's not because he's a bad player or bad technique. He's a great player.
He's a great phenomenal player. He's got an amazing engine.
Yeah, and he's got great technique.
Work rate is brilliant.
He must have, because they win scrums, and he's not very big. He really is not very big at all.
And he's young. We're talking about Marrow filling out, and Alfie Barbary, who is going to fill out even more. But Bevan Rudd, what is he, 21?
Yes, yeah, something like that.
He will fill out a lot more, but he's a very young man in propping terms. Very young man.
I just don't see the logic of going with him against Vincent Cock. What did you expect? I mean, actually, did we not see this the other week? We literally saw it last week.
Yeah.
So that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, they didn't actually scrimmage, because when Vincent Cock came on, Bevan Rudd came off. So they didn't actually scrimmage last week.
Yeah.
But, well, we saw Joe Marler against Vincent Cock.
Yes, there we go. So I just thought, everything about Sale's performance today was not great at all. Maybe they did keep in the fight till the end. I'll give them credit there.
Well, they came back, and Sale did this last season on a few occasions when they had a man down, man in the bin or a man off. That was when they sparked into life, and that's what was what happened this time. They scored their two tries with Byron McGuigan. Off the pitch.
Yeah, I wonder. Do you listen to Sanderson's post match?
No.
Yeah, I didn't saw it.
What do you make of it?
He didn't say anything that interesting.
He said one thing in particular.
He looked at the downsides, then looked at the positives.
He said, "I've been saying we need to improve on our set piece all season." That to me is a shot across the bow to whoever's in charge of that set piece.
Dorian West.
Yeah, okay. So either he's not doing the set piece, or he's telling himself to do the set piece. I'm guessing he's not doing that.
Is that I'm not suggesting this happens, but I've seen this in business before. I've seen this in businesses I've observed and some that I've been involved in, where I'm not suggesting this is happening, but you see it happen where bosses will throw someone below them under the bus.
Yeah.
To deflect.
It's very interesting.
I'm not saying that's what's happening, but if he's making comments like that, which directly, as you say, point a finger at Dorian West, that's he'll be nervous. Dorian West will be very nervous.
The other side of this is it's all, I think you mentioned this to me the other week, Jay, it's all diamonds, it's the old regime coaching team, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sanderson's not brought any of his teaming up to now, and he must be itching to do so.
Yeah, now this is purely from a Machiavellian point of view, okay? Purely Machiavellian now. Let's go through this. It's not a Sanderson thing at all. But if you're installed into a new organisation, do you make the changes as soon as you get there to get the best team around you so you can then do your job to the best of your ability? Or do you keep the old team around you as sort of sacrificial lambs for when things go wrong, and then you've got a reservoir of people to blame as you go forward?
I would do the former, but I can understand strategy in doing the latter.
Yeah, I would do a mixture of both. I'd have a couple of guys that I like, but just keep a couple of guys around who I can throw under the bus as well.
Yeah,
do you want the finger out? Have you got into
Succession?
Succession yet?
Not yet.
JB, get into Succession, man.
I'm going to try and do season two.
Oh, season two is... What did you think of season one?
It's reasonable.
Yeah, it's good. I love it. Like, someone I spoke to that I recommended it to said, I'm struggling because they're just all horrible.
They are all horrible.
Yes, that's it. They are.
Mind you, Game of Thrones, everyone's horrible. That's the most successful TV show ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is like a big media conglomerate, Game of Thrones. It is. It's amazing.
Is it? Which one's Connor? Is Connor the... Is there a Connor? Have I made that up?
Connor.
Who is the...
Hold on a second.
The tall, handsome... husband?
Oh, yeah. Connor. Oh, yeah. He's the guy who was in Ferris Bueller back in the day.
Is that who he is?
Yeah. Huh. Not Matthew Broderick, the main one, like Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
No, I'm thinking of...
Yeah, no, you are thinking of the one.
No, I'm thinking of the tall husband of the one that's meant to be Rupert Murdoch's daughter. No. Yes.
Oh, Tom.
Tom. He's the best character because he's so dislikable.
Yeah, he is so dislikable. And he's exactly who I was thinking of. He has got Greg as his...
That's the one, yeah.
He's got something ready to feed to the sharks if he needs to.
Perfect. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I'd keep a few guys. But I wonder if we're going to see the first change very shortly.
Mm.
Very shortly. Because they're doing okay, Sale, but... Where do they expect to be by now? I think they expect to be.
I'm looking at the league table. They were not expecting to be 17 points from 9 games.
Yeah, and in 10th place.
That said, look at London Irish, 7th with 2 wins.
Yeah.
After 9 rounds, it's incredible. 2 wins,
but 3 draws and 7 bonus points as well.
Yeah. But Sale with 17 points is a big concern for them. Bristol played 1 game fewer on 14 points. And that, when you asked the question about DORs who are legit, I would actually put Chris Boyd in that category.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah.
I would, yeah.
Look, I think they're all, to a certain degree, very good. I just wonder if their powers, now that everyone is basically at the cap because the cap has been restricted so much, are really coming to the fore. And actually, what isn't important is what the DOR does as such. Well, maybe it is.
Well, it is. I think in the case of Bristol, it is... I was going to say mismanagement. It's not mismanagement because it worked last season. They finished top of the league in the regular season. But the management of the salary cap can work out for you, but it can see you sitting 11th with 14 points after 8 games.
It's a gamble, right?
So I was thinking about this, the Bristol salary cap. And the problem with it, and let me define the problem first. So they have got 5 players who are all on more than £500,000.
Yeah.
They've got Sinclair, Nathan Hughes, Luatua, Piatau, Randrandra. So 5 players, all on £500,000. One of those is a marquee player.
Or more.
Yeah. And actually, I think significantly
more.
Randrandra
and Piatau, significantly more, yeah.
Yeah. But you take one of those out of the equation, but then you've got 4 players on greater than £500,000, and that is, well, it's more than 40% of your salary cap. It's actually
closer to...
They're
allowed 2 marquee players, right?
One.
Well, they used to have two.
But for this season, they still currently have 2. So Piatau and Randrandra will be both. But nevertheless, it's £1.5 million at least.
Yes, and it's probably more than that because of how far. But anyway, it's such an enormous chunk of your salary cap is taken up on a handful of players. And for someone like Randrandra or someone like Nathan Hughes, who for different reasons are not playing this season, that is an enormous gap in your budget. Now, that works as a short-term strategy, because you can get guys where you see value. So bringing guys like Dan Thomas or Henry Purdy, who are, I assume, relatively cheap, or Harry Thacker, relatively cheap, bring them in for low value, get them performing above their market rate. The problem why that is not a long-term strategy is, well, if they're performing above their market rate, then you're going to have to pay them their market rate in order to retain them.
Yeah.
Or you've got to lose them and bring new guys and hope they do the same. So you can't, that strategy means that your squad is going to have to be in a constant state of flux where you're getting in guys at the bottom of their value and raising it up and then moving them on instead of you paying them. And Bristol have not done that.
So the way you get around this, if you're confident with your pickups, is use 3-year contracts. And I've spoken about this loads. If you're using 2-year contracts, you're screwing yourself, because exactly what you've said. You've got Harry Thacker in, and he's far better than the £2,000 a year that you're paying him.
Or whatever. You're paying him 50 grand. Yeah. He's a 150 to 200 grand player.
Yeah, exactly. So he's on a two-year contract. Now, the director of rugby will be telling Harry Thacker, 2 years, back yourself. And if you're any good, we'll pay you. And then simultaneously, that same deal, I'll turn on to you and say, yeah, I've really screwed over Harry Thacker. This is a great deal for us. We've got no commitments, yada, yada, yada. Problem is, in the first year, he won't be worth 50 grand because, well, he might be worth 50
He'll have been
grand.
Signed for decent money when, well, he, when he moved.
Whichever,
anyway.
Right?
But anyway.
Second year, he'll come into his own. He'll probably be worth what, like what you pay him. But then he's gone. And when he goes, he'll then get 150 from the next from the next club because he's proved his worth as a first-team player.
Or you've got to pay him that full whack.
Exactly. If you have him on a three-year contract, on year two, you bring him into the office and say, look, awesome, you're on 50, how about we up you today by 20 grand? So that, but we'll tag on two more years or one more year. So you've always got control of the situation. The downside is if he gets injured or he can't contribute. That's far more effective than saying the two-year contract is the most stupid idea that any director of rugby has ever come up with, ever. Ever, ever, ever.
Stupider than the sideways rook.
The sideways rook?
Sideways caterpillar. I mean, it works.
It's pretty smart.
Not stupid, but...
Yeah. I don't know what the legalities are of that. I mean...
They're bound?
Yeah. I mean, they're right, aren't they?
But then, can they then, like, loop round? Like, circle round the whole thing? If you're bound?
Give it a go. Give it a go. I don't think you can you?
But as long as you're bound...
Yeah, and it's interesting. What does it mean for defences?
So you have a 10-man caterpillar like, towards your own try line, and then you curl it around...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So you envelop the scrum half.
Yeah, it's a...
Because they're all bound.
Where's the offside line if you... Yeah, that's a good point. Can you... Yeah, if the tackle is in one spot and you have your long caterpillar ruck, if you walked it all the way around to the opposition side, this... Where's the offside line?
Oh, no, no, no.
The offside line would still be the back feet, the back foot of you, towards you. So the offside line doesn't change, but it's that last man or those last men who, while they are bound, are walking around, like almost walking sideways and then backwards.
But this, but you'd have to be controlling the ball carefully. That's the difficulty.
But Phil's talking about the defence.
This is the defence.
Oh, defence.
Yeah.
So you sorry. I thought you were thinking turning an attacking caterpillar maul into a movable thing with the ball. Yeah.
So you're thinking like a tail, and then you sneak over the try line. Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
That's what exactly.
I'm bound.
So this is the ruck. So for the listeners, I've got my smartphone, my generic smartphone, Google 6 Pro, on the table. And imagine the box kick is occurring here. Well, what happened today, and it only happened once, is...
No, it didn't. It happened several times.
Did it? I only saw it once. It
definitely, because I've actually seen a couple of little GIF snips of it as well.
So they bind long. Well, actually, they don't bind that long that way. They bind long sort of this
diagonally.
Way. But because they're bound, they sort of come round. Right, so if you think of the human centipede, they've come around like a human centipede, so they're always facing the wrong way.
Or just like a regular centipede.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not humans. Right. And so when the box kick comes, they're already in a better position to charge
down. Yeah, so Ezekwe did it at least a couple of times. That
Saracens are always innovating.
So devious.
I've mentioned the innovation that I want to see someone try, and I think I've mentioned it on the pod before. No one's tried it yet, but someone will very soon, is... And we talked about it before, so I won't go into it. But to take advantage of the law about holding up players over the try line, when you're close to your own try line, actually inviting the player on and having a way to lift them up and pull them over your own line.
Well, do you know, we used to play defensive games where it's like sort of touch, but the difference is you've got to get two shoulders on and then you lift the player. Lifting a man between two players is remarkably easy. Mm. Remarkably easy.
Look at the choke tackle.
Yeah, but we're looking at choke tackle.
Choke
right?
tackle, 5 metres out, and then just walk him over your try line and fall over.
Actually, that is a remarkably good way to do it, because the way it used to be is, obviously, the knee didn't it wasn't the knee law. So now, if the knee touches, you got released. So that's how the choke tackle was defeated. Well, if the knee touches the floor now over the goal line, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. It's over. It's dropout.
Yeah. Done. Choke tackle it is.
Yeah.
Sean O'Brien's going to get an extension on his London Irish contract.
Yeah. We can't depart the actual rugby without mentioning Northampton, who played some brilliant attacking rugby once again.
Yeah.
Didn't they just? Gave Bristol a bit of a hiding. And Bristol did all right. You know, they had their organised maul. They were doing fine. I just think Pat Lamb's been massively found out with his, you know, with what he's trying to do. There again, they are missing some important players. But everybody is, so it doesn't matter. It does not matter.
Yeah. Missing players on individual games can cause issues. Missing players over the season, everyone's in the same position.
Yeah. But they've got three wins, actually. So they're not a million miles away.
Same as Sale.
Yeah.
Bristol, the disappointing, I didn't see the full game, but the thing that would be disappointing for them is that Northampton's scrum took them apart at times.
It really did. Manny O'Jurgen had a great scrimmage at one point.
Yeah, and now obviously they're missing Afoa and Sinclair.
There's a lot of money there.
There's a lot of money there. And a lot of experience and a lot of talent. But this was an issue that caused Bristol problems earlier in the season. And if they don't find a way to rectify it, then that's going to be a continual problem unless they've got those two boys. And Afoa's what, 58 years old now?
At least he's
only got one or two more seasons.
I think he's the same age as me.
He might be old.
I think he's 37. I'm still tearing it up.
For so many reasons and in so many ways, I just love Courtney Laws. And I love
38 he is.
I love that last month. I love that Courtney Laws is becoming undeniable as someone to love. Even the people that hate him have to love him.
I love how he has evolved his game over the last few years, actually, the last couple of years. And he still hits incredibly hard. He's still a dominator in the line out. He's still an absolute force of nature. But he's soft hands.
Why don't we start up a segment every week called Courtney Love? Where we just give our love to Courtney.
Can
we do it as a separate podcast?
Courtney Love.
Oh, big courts.
And I know we mentioned Exeter. I will just mention Bath actually looked... They look like they've got something to build from.
They do. Yeah. They can tell them, as you said a few times a couple of months ago, JB, Bath can tell themselves a story about the positives in that game, that they've pushed Exeter, who are a very good team, very close. And Exeter, who are stronger than they've been recently, they pushed them close, but unfortunately for them, they just get one losing bonus point.
Let me tell you this about Bath. Ed Griffiths has released his report. They need a defence coach. Who thought, thank goodness
they got Ed Griffiths in to tell him that.
Yeah, I wonder how much that cost.
A lot of money. Yeah, a lot of money. Look, if they listen to us, they could have got that for free. But here's a serious
You're point. Not free though, JB.
I will expect payment. It might not be monetary, but I will get my pound of flesh. Now, this is why it's important though, because I think this is the beginning of the beginning for Bath now. They are going to be good at some point between now next season, because I'm convinced that Ed Griffiths is going to do a good job there. I'm sure he is. You know, he's done a good job everywhere that he's been. He's an absolute formidable character. He's setting the groundwork to get rid of everybody, is what I believe. So he said results have to improve. They have to improve. Again, you could have got that from me. You could have got that anywhere, really, when you're winless all season. But I'm pretty
sure results can't get any worse.
I think you're going to see an influx of people from Saracens into Bath. And now, that is the obvious thing. But he's also mentioned the need for a team psychologist. Do you know who had a team psychologist?
Saracens?
Correct. And you listen to what Alex Sanderson says all the time. He's talking about psychology, this, that and the other.
Do you know, that's what I studied and intended to do, was to be a sports psychologist.
And what, you decided you didn't want to waste everyone's time?
Yeah. So I did a postgraduate applied psychology research stuff, and I was working at Bath University with the badminton players, the bobsleigh team, all the rest of it. And the reason I didn't is because the only jobs there were, you had to be a lecturer doing research, and there was no hands-on actual, there weren't enough actual doing the sports psychology stuff. Now there is.
You did a thing on kayaking.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, I've mentioned that before. Yeah. This little centering technique where they just squeeze you. You can train yourself to just by a little physical cue, like squeezing your paddle. You can get yourself into.
Is this the Gary Player red dot thing? Switch off, switch on. Look at the red dot.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, basically.
Which
yeah.
is why you can, you know, high five and have. No, a good but time.
It's just cool to hear yeah. that there are now plenty of jobs to the point that they're going.
Well, not for you. It's
get
not.
One in. Not for me. Well, no, but I've done.
Missed it. Missed
I've
it.
Done all right.
Yeah,
all
yeah, right. yeah. Fine. Yeah, yeah.
It worked out.
So, a Saracen story on their psychologist was basically they found out that there was a role like this in cricket, and I think the guy came from the Cricket Players Union. Mm. And said, well, cricket's got a resource, which is a psychologist. We'll just take that and we'll put it into Saracens. And it's really popular. And they'd be doing things like organising debate clubs. I think there was a debate subject that Saracens did. Something like, is religion real? Or something bizarre. And I think that is like, I think it's mixed between this guy who's, the guy's called David Jones and Alex Sanderson. And that's what they would do. They would do weird little things like that.
And then also, they'll go occasionally, let's get on the beers. Jump out of a plane and get on the beers.
Once you've got your own... But isn't it not like having kids and, you know, they can only have their dessert once they finish their line-outs? No, once they finish their dinner. Once they finish their dinner.
Yeah.
Like, you finish your dinner and then you have dessert. Finish yes. your line-outs. Line-outs good? Phenomenal.
Then
we have beers.
Let's get some beers in.
Yeah. Do your line-outs first. But so, yeah, I think Bath have already got the ex-Saracens communication guy. From when they all went down. Now they've got Ed Griffiths. Don't be surprised if you see a few more of the backroom staff go over to Bath.
Cool. Mm.
Little tidbit for you.
And other things going on in the world of rugby. Australia are the... What was it be described as? The preferred...
Yes.
...candidate for the next... For the 2027 World Cup.
So they've moved to... I think it is... They've moved to preferred bidder stage.
Christ. When's this for?
2027.
How many jobs will we need to have by then to get in? Will we even be able to go?
Yeah.
Whole world will be shut down again.
64 jobs to go to the next World Cup. Can't wait.
I mean, yeah. The way Australia is right now. Jesus.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure we want to go.
No,
at the
thank
moment.
You.
No, but, thanks.
But the more interesting thing.
Hopefully it'll be better by then, obviously.
Anyway, yes. Yeah, it can't be much worse.
Jeez, can't be much worse.
So. 2023, France. 2027, Australia as preferred bidder. So I think they're in like a one-on-one position. But the announcement from World Rugby also said that they are taking a bid from Rugby America very seriously for 2031.
I don't have that long. I do have that long, but I don't.
There's a lot of Fridays between now and then.
I don't want to wait that long. Yeah. I'm disappointed Argentina. They don't obviously throw their hat in the ring, but I'm disappointed Argentina as a huge rugby nation, or Italy for that matter, as a huge rugby nation.
Yeah, and Italy do have
loads of stadiums.
Loads of stadiums. They've got loads of football stadiums. They've got lots of infrastructure. They've got enough hotels to host an influx of 500,000 people.
But fine, we can take it to Australia again, I guess.
Yeah,
fine, whatever. Doesn't inspire me. Don't really care much for it.
So. Yeah.
Hey, do you want to hear?
It means also having you have to. There's nothing wrong with breakfast, but it means having to watch games with your breakfast rather than watching games.
I do quite
with
like
beers.
That though. I love
it. A few breakfast beers.
Yeah, because it's actually I disagree with you here because one, my favourite meal of the day is breakfast. Actually, no, my second favourite meal of the day is breakfast. My first favourite meal of the day is all day brunch. So that works very well for watching
rugby morning. When's an evening kickoff in the UK? No, but this is it. The games will be through the night.
Well, the problem is an early kickoff, so like a midday kickoff or a 2 p.m. kickoff Australian time will be like 3 in the morning UK time. That's the problem.
The late kickoff will be 8 a.m.
But fortunately, all the England games will be late kickoffs.
Yeah.
All the important ones because they're the biggest market.
Yeah, I'll live with it. It'll be all right. Just about all right, I think. Yes. I remember Wales playing at like 5 in the morning, so ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, that is a good point.
We have seen it before in 2003 and 2011. And then 67% of the Lions tours.
Well, yeah, exactly, which is kind of my point about why I'm disappointed it's not been going elsewhere. But fine.
Spain or Italy would be
hey,
great.
Let me tell you a story.
Spain and Italy. As a combined bid, why not?
Let me tell you a story about my conversation with Premiership Rugby this week.
Yes, before you do that, I was just going to say the other thing to mention is, and this follows on from a pretty scathing second podcast last week.
Oh, yes.
And one of the things which we pointed out about Rassie Erasmus and the South African Rugby Union was not just what Rassie did in the first place, but the lack of contrition and the fact they were going to appeal when they were clearly banged, well, Rassie was banged to rights and had no leg to stand on. Fortunately, census prevailed and Rassie and the South African Rugby Union have withdrawn their appeal notices. Rassie has also apologised. So finally, some sense has been restored to an ugly situation.
I am against the apology, unsurprisingly. I am against the apology. I think everything else in the post has been absolutely fine. It's all checked out. I think it's good. I think they're right to stand down. That's fine. Why do you need to make him apologise? I don't get that bit. I don't like the bit about, you know, you must bend the knee. You must.
That is infantilising a grown man a little bit.
Yeah, just if he
wants to do that, that's fine.
Yeah, if he really means it, please apologise. You know, I think that's a good thing to do.
But that's for him to do.
Yes,
it's not for him to be told to do.
And the fact that they've written it down somewhere, they should just leave it. And if he wants to, he can.
I quite like it, but only because, and Rassie, I don't think I've read the full apology, but I don't think he did this. I quite like forcing him to do it because then he can have the most sarcastic, insincere, written, worded apology.
Was it 27 words?
Three cheers for World Rugby. World Rugby.
Exactly. Exactly.
I am sorry. Style. Move on. Yeah.
Now, on this, I don't know if either of you caught the Morgan Sports Law briefing the other day.
But can I just say about Morgan Sports Law? That is Ben
Cisneros.
He did a really awesome seminar this week, which did you go to it?
Nope.
I did.
Steve Diamond.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
Oh, right. Did you go to it?
I was unavailable at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, so I watched it recorded.
Oh, right. So I dialed in live.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's gone. Very interesting.
Fill me in on the sort of, briefly, the highlights.
So, Ben Cisneros, Rugby in the Law, at Rugby in the Law on Twitter. Very good. Very knowledgeable. Trainee lawyer. There was Steve Flynn, who is a lawyer, works in sports. There's then Matthew O'Grady, who is a former referee and barrister, alongside Chris Jones of the BBC, and Steve Diamond discussing the finer points of the Rassie Erasmus case. It was really interesting, really good conversation. Some of the stuff that Diamond said was really intriguing.
Yeah, I thought so as well.
So I was very interested in both the fact that Diamond came down hard on Rassie. Diamond was really outspoken about how bad he saw this as being, and that he really went to great lengths to disaggregate the hot debrief, as we've called it in the past, where Diamond in the past has been in trouble several times, but as he has walked off the pitch, he's lost, he's angry, he's frustrated, there's a camera and a microphone pointed in his face, and he says something he shouldn't have. Compared to this, which is the other end, this is like 2 days later, the dust has settled. This was a cold, calculated assassination of Nick Berry as an individual. Yeah. So really interesting that side. And then Diamond, actually, did you hear the point he made that he said about 5 or 6 years ago, videos were going around, not to this extent, but there were videos that were being sent to referees to point out, so like a DOR would produce a short video, a couple of minutes, send it to the referees, not to the press or leak it or anything like that, saying, watch out for this, their tight head likes to go in, they have hands on the floor here, they're playing with just having a few basically points to the referee about the opposition for the game ahead. And he said that was getting out of hand, and they stopped it by making a rule that if it gets sent to the referees, it also goes to the opposition DOR.
Oh, I think that's a great rule. Yes,
I think it's a great rule.
It's a good rule.
I'm pretty sure I've seen one of these videos actually, but not before the game, but after the game.
After is a bit different. This before, it's the deliberate influencing of the referee, some of which can be like subtle, and some of which is far less subtle, i.e.
They also had, they being Saracens, had analysis on the referee. So when analysis really got serious, when they got really serious about what they were doing, obviously they handed out their stat packs, and one of the stats had the amount of time on average the referee would take before blowing up for a holding on penalty, which I quite like. I don't know if they still do that. Probably not, because I think probably every referee is pretty similar now.
Now, I thought that conversation was really interesting. There were two bits that were absent from it for me. And one of those was they touched on it, but not in enough detail for me, which was just how much shit Razzie threw at the wall to try and get out of anything. And he threw everything. He tried to make the hearing public by trying to invoke the European Convention for Human Rights.
Well, that's not going to wash in the UK, is it?
Yeah. So that and everything that he did to try and avoid and to not recognise that he had been wrong, I don't think they touched on that enough. And the other side of it that I don't think was touched on at all, but I'd love to get their take on it, which is something I mentioned last week, which is Nick Berry was not the target in this. Razzie Rasmus totally assassinated Nick Berry without the intention of... That was just collateral damage. His total focus was on influencing the referees for the future tests.
Yeah.
And that is the one... It's like the elephant in the room for me. It's not addressed in the 80-page report. It wasn't addressed in this conversation. And it's probably because they don't need to, because they can get him on the proven stuff. But it's just not been addressed, that Razzie's actual intention of the video. It doesn't seem to be addressed anywhere.
The fact that he wanted to influence.
Yeah, it wasn't about... So he's been done for threatening Nick Berry,
yeah,
for releasing a video that was abusive, for the abusive nature of the video, blah, blah, blah. It's all about what he said about Nick Berry. His intention of saying... The reason why he said all that stuff about Nick Berry was not to...
Disparage Nick Berry.
It was all about influencing the referees for the future test, and that's the bit that's never. I might have just missed it, but that's the bit that's not been addressed. And I'm interested to get, the fine legal mind's take to why that's not been addressed.
Well, we might get. Well, again, I suppose that's difficult to prove unless Razzie admits it. That said, Supersport in South Africa are making a documentary on this.
Cannot wait to watch that.
I cannot wait to watch that either. I wonder whether the outcome might be more reasons for piss to boil over Razzie. I wonder if this will be his, all right, I'll take my medicine now. I've had to and I've been forced
to. Well, he did say wherever this ends up, including Supersport.
Yeah.
So
hope this doesn't end up on Supersport. Ooh.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't drag rugby through the mud again.
I genuinely think it will.
I can
honestly see another disciplinary hearing after that Supersport documentary comes out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway,
let's talk. Anyway, so JB,
do you want to talk about how the game is administered? Because that's kind of what we were talking about then. How the game is administered?
Okay.
Let's go for it.
Now, if you want to talk about getting into trouble, this will get me into some trouble, no doubt, which is exactly why I'm here. So, you may have noticed it's rainbowification week in the Premiership. Everything's got to have a rainbow on it. Corner flags, referees. I honestly don't think this is going to stop until every team is playing in... two teams, both in identical rainbow strips. I think that is the natural progression of where this is going to go.
But no, colourblind people, one horizontal and one vertical rainbow.
Yes, exactly right. That's the only way that this can possibly go. So, I call Premier Rugby this week, Friday to be precise, to ask questions about this campaign. Because one of the reasons it has attracted my attention is because it's still linked to Stonewall. Now, anyone who's followed the news will tell you that Stonewall has got its own problems, and I don't think that they're a particularly good organisation to partner with. There are many other LGBTQ plus organisations, or just LGBT, or just LGB organisations that you can partner with. So I wanted to know the rationale behind it.
Yeah, and specifically on that point, if anyone doesn't know anything, that many, many corporations, many, many companies, many, many other organisations are withdrawing from activity with Stonewall because of issues with trans identification and whatever, which we don't need to get into, but it was enough for me as well. I didn't realise the whole Rainbow Laces was Stonewall until...
Well, Bristol tweeted about it, then everyone tweeted about it, and then I googled it, and it turns out it's a Stonewall campaign.
Exactly, it's a Stonewall campaign.
Just on Stonewall, historically, you know, they're an organisation that deserve a lot of credit.
Absolutely.
It's only recently that this controversy has come about them. And like you say, it's not really for this podcast. Go and look at why that's controversial. But we might get into a little bit of why it affects rugby later on. So I called Premiership Rugby and I said to them, why are we doing this? Is there any particular reason? Now,
and I'm sure the question wasn't, why are we doing this? It's, why are we doing this?
No, it was, why are we doing this? it was the former, not the latter. Because I just don't think it's a good idea. And the answer I got from Premier Rugby and the subsequent conversation that I had with them is truly astonishing. So Premiership Rugby tell me, and I was calling in my capacity as a podcaster.
Yeah, so just checking, this is all like...
Yeah, this is not off the record.
On the record chat.
This is just calling.
Just do due diligence, just checking.
Yeah, this is me calling as a podcaster. They said that they have done diversity campaigns and inclusion campaigns in the past. They're currently doing one now, and they will always do them in the future. To which I said, that's a bit strange, is it not? Would you not hope to stop if we reached equality? Would that not be a good thing to do? The answer I then received was that I don't understand, I don't get out enough, and that if I did understand, I would know that LGBTQ plus people are underrepresented in Premiership stadiums. Now, this really perked up my interest, because what bit of information do you think you would need to know in order to make that statement?
You would need to know what the representation in the general population is and then how that compares to a Premiership rugby ground.
And to achieve that, you would have to use some kind of measuring metric, standardised statistic that you can then standardise and statistically analyse.
Yeah, absolutely right. So I asked Premiership Rugby, how many LGBTQ plus people are in your stadiums on any given week? And they didn't answer me. They just said, we need to do better every week. I said, do you have the number? Are you sure? I said, yep, we are sure that they are underrepresented. So what is the number? Do you have a percentage? Do you have gross numbers?
And this is just in stadiums, or is this across stadiums. The game players?
It was specifically okay. Spectators in stadiums. This is exactly what was said. So no idea how many people were in the stadium from that community, which then begs the question, how do you know you've got a problem? If they don't know that... They don't know what the percentage is. How do they know that? How do they not know? Oh, how do they know that they've got a problem? Now, I'm willing just to say that if you're in Premiership Rugby, maybe you've got a gut feeling that people are underrepresented or people are overrepresented. I think that's a fair thing to say.
Yeah.
So I asked them then, what level do you think you need to get to before equality is achieved? What level? What number do you think that they gave me?
Well, if they can't give you the current number, it's hard to then give any subsequent number with any credibility.
Yes. So do you think they've got... But they might have a target. They might go, hey, look, we'll get to 20% one day.
I don't know what the general population figure
I'd
would
say,
be.
Yeah, if slightly better than... But then, I'd say better. Surely equality would be
Equivalent to...
Yeah, representative. Because better, if there's more of one group of people, there are fewer of another group of people.
Yeah.
This is why I dislike... I think it's such reductive thinking to see everybody as groups.
Absolutely.
100%.
So the answer is, for Premiership Rugby, the actual answer is, this blows my mind, there is no upper limit. So now I'm really interested. No upper limit. Does that mean 100%?
Well,
no.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it does.
100% of people in the stadium, and then... 1,000% of people queuing up outside who are begging to get into the stadium.
Yeah. So, and by the way, we don't know it's not 100%.
It might be.
We have no idea. So they don't know the problem that they're willing to cast aspersions on the Premiership, saying that we're underrepresenting people, presumably because of some form of horrible discrimination. But they don't know they've got a problem. And furthermore, they can't actually tell me when the problem will be solved. Other than, and this is actually their measure, there is no upper limit. So there's no upper limit. So I pushed a bit harder. Went, okay, so it's not 100%, is it? Because, no, that's ridiculous. Is it 50? Yeah, I think we'd be quite happy at 50% LGBTQ plus in the stadiums. So I then followed that with, is this not a case then that you'd be discriminating against other people? Other people would be underrepresented, from all sorts of backgrounds. That, and this again is an actual quote, that doesn't matter... because they are not discriminated against minorities. So if you're not from a discriminated minority, you are categorically, on the record, less important to Premiership Rugby than if you are.
Well, also, again, the reductive thinking here, one is to see everybody in terms of an identity group, and secondly, it's to see any disparity in numbers as a consequence of discrimination.
Exactly. What if nobody from the LGBTQ population wants to come? What are we going to do? Just force them there? I mean, and that's exactly it. People want to do what they want to do.
And if you start slicing up into... Well, yeah, and this is the issue I have. If you start slicing everybody into an identity group, well, how many different identity groups do you fit into? Do I count as gay, or because I'm Muslim, do I count as Muslim? Or am I also... however you want to slice... Exactly. Working class... Middle class, like you can infinitely slice people up into these groups. I'm all for making the sport welcoming to everybody, but there's got to be bigger picture ways we do that rather than this.
I mean, this is completely backwards thinking. So then I asked them two further questions, which was, have you ever measured LGBTQ+ people in your stadiums historically? And if so, how do you do it? And they told me that that was the single most stupid question that they'd heard. And even if they could do it, they wouldn't do it. So they've got a problem, which they don't know if they have. They have a solution, which they don't know. Well, they don't know what the solution looks like. And even if they could measure it, they wouldn't measure it. All the time telling rugby that it discriminates against LGBTQ people. That is simply ridiculous.
Well, in terms of the messaging from clubs... From BT Sport, for example, the broadcaster, from the messaging, I don't think the messaging has been everybody's welcome, basically. So in terms of what the actual messaging they're saying, the word discrimination, I don't really think has come up very much.
No.
But I understand maybe? It's sort of implicit. A lot of people can read it that way.
So this actually, you think, okay, why on earth am I going down this garden path here? What is the point? Why can't I just accept that, you know, we all just wave a rainbow flag and we're all just allies and, you know, we're all happy. Why can't I just toe the line and shut up?
Yeah, because some people would characterise you right now as that you're anti-LGBT community. That's how a lot of people, and we know the type, that's how they would characterise this chat you're having now.
There are two reasons. Okay, number one. It is utter incompetence not to know who is in your stadium. So for Premiership Rugby to say they have a problem in their crowd and not be able to quantify it, as I've just demonstrated, tells me they have not a single idea who they're trying to communicate to and how best to do that. So at Wasps this week, on Friday night, there was only 5,000 people in the stadium.
That was it.
In a 30,000-seater stadium?
Yeah. Why are they not communicating to people who would want to go to Premiership Rugby games? Why are they not spending their budgets on that?
So
second of all,
yeah, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, second of all, let's just assume that Premiership Rugby are right, and I'm open to the fact that they could be right, even though they have no way of proving it and never would want to prove it, even if they could. What if this campaign is not actually doing any good? What if there's just a really simple thing rugby can do to increase its diversity and representation, but we don't know because we don't want to measure it and we never would measure it? I mean, it's the most stupid thing I've ever heard of. And I gave the PR director a simple analogy, which was, if I was playing a game of rugby and I was analysing my game and I said I need to improve my tackle count, but that was based on not knowing what my tackle count was and what I wanted it to be, that would be absolutely, absolutely stupid. And they said, yeah, but you're right. Just go out and make one more tackle, JB. You will improve. I said to them, I didn't use that analogy because it's a good one. I used it because it was a terrible one. And this is exactly what you're doing. And their views on other things are absolutely remarkable. So I asked them about what do you do for people with learning difficulties like dyslexia? Because they are obviously discriminated against. And they said, you can go and play mixed ability rugby. Well, thank you for that. I mean, I played like...
You can go and play mixed ability rugby, JB, because of your dyslexia.
Yeah, I get my grammar and my spelling wrong. I've now got 15 more years at top level rugby playing mixed ability rugby after my 600 plus games at club rugby. These people are lunatics. But it's really important because, you know, if I spoke to a club owner earlier on this week, and he reckons he spent something like £20 million propping up a rugby team. And I just think that is money thrown down the drain because your central resource is so poor. It is so poor. And, you know, if this is what they're doing on this particular subject, what are they doing in everything else? It just makes you think, has anyone got any clue what they're doing? It sounds like they have decided to co-opt gay people. Sorry, LGBTQ plus, in order to get some pocket money from a bank, literally from banks and sponsors. And that's as far as it goes. There's no thought behind it. There's no strategy. There's no real inclusion. It's literally, let's go and get it. It is the worst. When people say woke, woke people are not gay people that want better representation or trans people. Woke is a word for idiots that do this for just, you know, narcissistic reasons. And that's exactly what Premiership Rugby have done. There's no other word for it.
So you're not going to be wearing your rainbow laces to Talk H next week?
If I thought it made a difference, I would.
Mm.
But it doesn't, so I won't. Now, there is one finer point on this, and I said it at the start. Partnership with Stonewall is actually quite controversial. Because
I was just going to make that point, as in, if the objective, and I've got no... I want everybody that can enjoy rugby as a spectator, as a player, taking their kids along, I want everybody to do that.
Yep.
And that's my objective. I want everybody to do it. And the numbers are such and are dwindling that I don't care where that comes from overall, but I do see where the growth areas are. And the growth areas, as I see it, are in working class communities.
Yeah.
Muslim, Asian, yeah. Indian subcontinent. I don't know how to describe the group, but you understand.
The growth areas are everyone that wants to play rugby.
Yeah,
right.
The growth areas, first and foremost, are people who might be interested in rugby. But secondly, there are huge groups of people who I would strategically try and open the game up to who have never even considered getting involved in the game or watching a match. And there's loads of them. The point I was going to make was this is the reason why the rainbow laces thing. Just I have a little question mark next to it is because I've chatted to several gay friends about this, and they really, really do not like Stonewall. They think it is inflammatory to a lot of gay people.
Well, oh yeah, women's rugby. Anecdotally, I don't have the stats, which makes me just as bad as Premiership Rugby. But I would suggest there's quite a lot of lesbians playing women's rugby. I think that's a fair thing to say. Who gets the raw deal from most of Stonewall campaigning at the moment? Lesbians. So Premiership Rugby have decided to throw their lot in, effectively getting involved with this, like, almost like a civil war within that community. And maybe they should just make it open to whoever wants to go without having to, you know, side with one organisation or another. And that'd be my point. And that's the point that I made to Premiership Rugby. And again, the most astounding response, which was, JB, we need to do something. I said, no, you don't. You'd be better off doing nothing and making rugby really attractive. He goes, well, that'll be the quote then, JB. We'll just do nothing. This is the level of administration that rugby has to overcome. It's just not good enough. It's not good enough. So, why are people wasting money on this sport when the people in charge of the sport and promoting the sport are doing such a terrible job?
I'm slightly reticent to say it, but I am just going to point out something which is... I'm up for anything which gets more people coming to games, makes more people interested in the game, makes more people love the game. I'm up for it. And I think the intentions for most people are good. It's just clearly not thought through, and they're not measuring your audience, so you can't understand your audience. I think it's
completely cynical. I think it's totally cynical, and it's there for one thing and one thing only. That's to raise revenue from corporate sponsors, right, which is dwindling anyway.
Which would lead on to my next point, which is next weekend is the Dubai Sevens.
It's this weekend.
Oh, it was this weekend.
Maybe last weekend. Wonderful.
The Dubai Sevens was this weekend, so at where rugby has a long-standing relationship with having a big, very lucrative Sevens tournament in Dubai, which is well-attended. And the Rugby Seven Circus arrives there. Lots of corporate sponsors are on board in a country where it's illegal to be gay.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And where people are killed for it.
I also think Premiership Rugby have not been honest with me, because they say no money has changed hands between Stonewall and Premiership Rugby. But I can't imagine being a partner is free. just knowing what I know about how
I don't know, mate. Because a lot of it is optics and how it looks and what
how people think it looks
and fit exactly what you said. It's better to the sense that it's better to do something now rather than nothing.
Premiership Rugby would say in their defence that something like 84% of LGBTQ plus people do not feel welcome at sporting events or sporting grounds. I do not dispute that number. I'd like to know more about it, but I'm going to take it at face value. Now, sporting events, why doesn't Premiership Rugby have the numbers for rugby? Because that would be a far better measure than, say, lumping us in with football and cricket and everything else. And I don't know what those
MMA
sports...
and...
MMA, yeah.
I remember going to an MMA thing with you in Bolton. I felt intimidated.
Yes, everybody.
I was with you and Ali Ellis.
Yes, literally everybody in there, LGBTQ plus or not, was intimidated.
Anyone, yeah.
It was 100% intimidation right there.
It was very exciting because of it.
Well, the other element is if there are sports that have significantly better outcomes in that sense, then there might be something to learn.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do you know what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what Premiership Rugby said? Specifically about my measuring thing. How would you do it? How would you do it? I don't get the six-figure salary, by the way, for promoting Premiership Rugby, despite all that I do down here on the podcast to do exactly that, and probably with far more effect than they do. But they said, how would you do it? And just off the top of my head, I was like, well, don't Quins have an LGBTQ plus fan club? Which surely you should go and talk to them first. They would have far better ideas than just you trying to get corporate money. That would be a far better... The thing which gets me the most... All the clubs have got community projects, they've got academies, they're trying to increase the people through the gate. And when you go into the community, that message is the polar opposite to what Premiership Rugby have, which is, you don't matter to us. And I know that for a fact, because when I asked them, hey, wouldn't you be underrepresenting other communities? Well, they literally said, they don't matter, they're not oppressed. I mean, it is a maddening point of view which they're operating with there. I don't know if they're sincere. I don't know if they're reading off a script. I don't know what they were thinking. But just to say that just enrages me. You don't matter because you are not a minority. And the fact is, everybody matters. If you like watching rugby, you matter. And that should be the message from Premiership Rugby. Not that some people matter more than others. Or indeed, that if you're dyslexic, go and play mixed ability rugby. Or with speech impediment, mixed ability rugby.
Mm. Well, you've got two.
I know. I 20 years at the top.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Someone else they could speak to. I met a chap, got introduced to him through my brother, Baron Haywood, who sits in the House of Lords, who is a former rugby referee.
Yeah, I know.
And he was telling me when I was chatting to him, he's got historic involvement in King's Cross Steelers.
Oh, has he?
So, links to rugby, links to the House of Lords, links to the King's Cross Steelers. I'm sure he would be a very interesting person to have a conversation with about this exact topic.
Do you know what? We've got so many good role models in rugby who Premiership Rugby could have spoken to, but they took a campaign off the shelf because it was commercially expedient. The guy that you've just mentioned there, the Quins LGBT group, Nick Heath. There are so many good people to talk to, and yet they decided not to do it, and the communication of the whole thing is just dreadful.
Yeah, so I would rather than saying they've decided not to do anything, it is that they've just done the easy tick.
Yeah,
we'll do the Rainbow Laces thing. We can feel good about that. Don't talk about Dubai.
Don't talk about Dubai.
Talk about Dubai, and then also. I can't believe we've done that now, but we need to do something for this and this. It's got the best of intentions, it really has. But actually, if it's a problem you actually want to solve, this isn't a solution.
Yeah, and it is the incompetence of it. Because I started the conversation thinking this is a total nonsense. And not only was I proved it was a total nonsense, it also actually led me down the garden path of going somewhere else, which is actually, I do want to know now. I do want to know what the composition of the crowd is. I do want to know if we're doing a good or a bad job. Because I think it's important. If there's an easy change we could make, we would all do it. Mm. We would all do it tomorrow.
And one of the things I'm most proud of with rugby, and which I will say right now, and it's a reason why I would say if you're a parent of a child, you should take your kid along to mini rugby. If you've got a local rugby club, you should go down and get involved. You should go and play with the vets team if you've retired and want to get back into it. Is because rugby is one of the most tolerant, friendly, accepting places in your community. Fact,
yeah.
Whatever your background, And we've talked a number of times about the fact we play, you know, you'll sit and you'll have a welder to your left and a
banker to,
and
barrister to your left, barista to your right.
Barista to your right, exactly. And you all come together in this brilliant melting pot, and rugby fans sit together, they drink together, and it's an amazing place.
Just the last.
But if there is a genuine issue,
we want to know.
I want to know about it because I want that to be true.
Yeah, completely right. So just one last thing, right? I don't know how the head of press and ended up there, but I assume he's there to field questions from journalists because he must be the best at fielding questions. It sounds to me like he's never been asked a question in his life, certainly not a challenging question because, well, you know, from the answers that I've given you today, it was a relatively one-sided conversation, I would say.
What I would suggest is potentially this is just a football campaign that rugby have just gone.
Exactly what it is, right?
We'll do all that.
Get this: for every question that I answered, I didn't really get an answer. I got a counter question. One of the funniest counter questions was, "Yeah, you're asking me what I'm doing to spread rugby. What are you doing?" I was like, "Hang on a minute! I don't phone the fire brigade and say, hey, I've got a fire. Can you come and put it out?'" And they go, "Hang on a minute. What are you doing to put it out? Like, you're the fire brigade. You get paid. This is your job. Your job is to know simple things about the crowd. Who to communicate to. Who's watching rugby. They couldn't be more simple questions, could they? They couldn't be more. Yet, they're willing to make these sweeping statements. And that's the problem. They're just unprepared. It's unprofessional. It's unprofessional and it's incompetent. That is the problem.
Shall we move on to something that you will be interested in to wrap this pod up?
Before, Black History Month.
Before doing some predictions.
And I'm just going to stick up for JB at this point because some people will characterise you, and you're used to this by
now. Yeah, it's fine.
Some people will characterise you as being antagonistic and...
Why do you hate gay people, Jay?
Yeah,
why don't you just wave the flag and shut up? That was basically from Premiership Rugby.
So, and whilst you are, I mean, one of the first things you said on the podcast, which raised a little smile out of me, was about the World Rugby law change. And you went, that is a mainstream view that it's a good thing. I disagree. I did giggle. But I am going to stick up for JB and say to anyone that would characterise this as antagonistic or anything, JB, of anyone I know... is just wanting anyone to come and enjoy rugby, whoever the hell you are.
Although,
and that's the objective.
As Premiership Rugby said, what have you done to promote rugby? 10 years into this,
nearly 10 years, every single Monday morning.
Incredible! They don't even know who's talking about them. That's how rubbish they are at their communication strategy.
The top four played each other in the Championship.
Yes, and. The top team didn't win.
Yes.
Ealing lost to Doncaster. Fantastic
22-5.
Result. Who actually put an equation up, didn't they, on their Instagram of how they won.
They put what, sorry?
Some sort of a rugby equation up of how they won. It's like, look after your line-outs and kick the ball long, or something like that. It's like, something ridiculous. So anyone can
ridiculously
beat,
easy.
Yeah, anyone could beat Ealing. We could beat Ealing.
And then Jersey Reds beat Cornish Pirates as well to leapfrog.
So what does... Hang on a minute.
So this means you've got Ealing in first place, who've won 6 out of 8, 31 points.
Yep.
Jersey Reds in second place, who've won 5 out of 8, but have drawn one against Ampt Hill on 29 points, so 2 points behind. Then Cornish Pirates, who've also won 6, same as Ealing, on 28, and Doncaster on 26.
Where are Richmond, though?
Doncaster are really pushing for a Premiership. They know a Premiership spot's up for grabs.
Yeah.
Doncaster are going for it because they sense with Leeds struggling that there is a Yorkshire academy up for grabs. There's regional
dominance
up for grabs. So Doncaster are really going for it. Cornish Pirates have just got the plans for their new stadium. They are properly going for it. And Ealing have just unveiled their new training plan, and they've got a very rich owner, and they're properly going for it. This is interesting.
Yeah. So I've heard a story. I've heard.
Imagine if this didn't matter. Imagine if this meant nothing.
But it doesn't. Well, so.
It does. So it means.
It means something now.
Yeah. One of these can go up to be in the 14 team version for next season that gets locked in for 1 year, and then there's going to be a review after that.
Yes.
Yeah. So the RFU are saying that they're. are foreign investors waiting to come in to buy a team? I don't believe this one bit. I don't believe this one bit. But it's one of those rumours that is going around. And I think the idea behind the rumour is to encourage businessmen to come and buy championship teams, pour in money under the idea that they could sell to a foreign conglomerate once you're in the Premiership. So get in now, in the Championship. They offer you to tell you that they know a foreign syndicate that are ready to swoop in and buy it off you, providing you get Premiership status. Now, I don't know who's fallen for that yet, but that is certainly the conversations which have been had. I think that sounds like nonsense to me personally, knowing what I know about rugby and owners, because if that was the case, surely these foreign conglomerates would be buying, well, everyone else.
Well, what I would say is that the steel sharpening steel analogy that you've used, you're going to get a good team, whichever one does make it up.
Yeah. Where are Richmond, though?
They are in 7th, 1-3.
They were second the other week.
They're part-time.
Yeah, but still they were second.
They achieve incredible things. They've got a fantastic coaching team.
The best coaching team I've heard.
The interesting thing, so all those four teams, Ealing, Jersey, Cornish Pirates and Doncaster, they've all won 5 or 6 out of 8. They all have very similar points against, ranging from 1-3-6 to 1-5-6, so in a very narrow band.
Yeah, yeah.
Points 4 suggests that Ealing are flat track bullies.
So the Patrick Cliverts of the Championship.
You described former Irish number 8, Jamie Heaslip, as a flat track bully for a while. So Doncaster, points 4, 207. Cornish Pirates, points 4, 201. Jersey Reds, points 4, 230. Ealing Trailfinders, points 4, 408.
Wow.
So Ealing are hammering a few teams, and then, well, in these closer games, they're struggling.
Yeah. Is Alex Shaw still at Ealing?
I think so. I assume so, but I don't know.
If they go up, that is such a cool story. Yeah. So he literally just wrote about academies. He came on uni and just wrote everything he could about academies over and over again until someone paid enough interest to give him a job. And if they go up, he is now, what, a very major cog in a promoted team, which were formerly nobody's.
Yeah.
It's an amazing story.
If you could pick a team to go up, I mean, Ealing's a great story, but they're in West London.
Doncaster.
Would you go
Doncaster?
It would be Cornish Pirates or Doncaster for me.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, Cornish Pirates would be good.
Who's the one that we missed out? Cornish Pirates, Doncaster, Ealing,
Jersey.
Jersey's an interesting one.
That is an interesting one. You could see them being
Well, with their tax situation as well.
That's a good point. How many people live in Jersey?
Effectively, they've got a salary cap that's much higher than everyone else's.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In real terms.
And they've also got, I imagine, an island full of very wealthy people.
Yes. Mm. How many people live there?
I'm going to say 100,000.
You've pretty much bob on. 97,857.
Big go.
In 2011.
So, Sale can't fill out a stadium yet, but they will do. And there's, what, 600,000 in the Greater Manchester area? Inside the Ring Road.
I was going to say, Greater Manchester's nearly 3 million.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry. So I've got that completely wrong. Now, Jersey could potentially be the next Bath, which is a very wealthy area. They only need a small stadium, but the price of ticket, not Bath, forget Bath. They could be like Monaco Football Club.
Yes.
So small stadium, but the ticket prices are 6 times higher.
Astronomical.
But you only need 6 spectators. And they get to watch it with like champagne and whatnot. I'm into that. I'm massively into that. And the seafood on there is excellent. Excellent.
I'm going to push you to pick one, Phil, rather than us going, I went Doncaster or Cornish Pirates. If I had to pick one.
For the good of the game, Doncaster. For the good of my travel schedule, Jersey.
I'm going to pick...
Cornish Pirates would be cool.
Yeah.
I think there's good stories behind all four of them. Because Ealing, obviously, doesn't have the... It's geographically close to other clubs, but... It's still a pretty cool story, the investment the targeted ambition.
I'm going to go Cornish Pirates if I had to pick one to go up. I'm backing Cornish. I'm supporting Cornish Pirates for the remainder of this championship season in that title push because it is such a rugby hotbed. And I've used the example before, but I remember going down to watch a County Cup game at Newbury when Berkshire team, I was a kid, I was like a mini, and they played Cornwall. And Cornwall brought up about 10 busloads of fans. I've never seen Newbury Rugby Club as full and as many people having as good a time as when Cornwall came to play.
That's a good point. I'm just torn between my love of Northern Rugby and putting it in Jersey, because they do sort of deserve it. They've built a hell of a thing down in Jersey. They're so well supported. And I just, I feel like if Doncaster do it, it's not going to... I feel it's going to be like the second coming of Leeds.
Or the third coming of Rotherham.
Rotherham, yeah.
That's how I feel it's going to go.
Yorkshire just aren't going to get on board with Premiership rugby.
There's a lot of competition from other sports, rugby league and football.
Are they going to have enough money to spend on their salary cap? I mean, that's what I need to know. I believe Jersey will. I believe Jersey will spend right to the limit, but will Doncaster? Mm. But there again, Doncaster's more sustainable ultimately if they can, because you've got all of the local talent and there is loads around.
In terms of players, there is. In terms of supporters, I think Leeds and Rotherham have shown you that it's not going to be enough for the Premiership. And there is an issue. If I was sat in Premiership rugby, I'd be going, right, got a massive county that produces incredible number of England internationals.
Rainbow Laces.
How do we get Yorkshire men and women to come and watch rugby?
A great question.
There's a project. Work on that.
Yeah, and they won't. They won't, because you don't matter, because you're not a minority.
Players literally, wearing flat caps.
Literally the words. Yeah. Imagine like the...
Whippets as the assistant referees running up and down the side.
Kind of like... The Rassing.
That is offensive to Yorkshireman, Tim.
Like the Rassing of the North. I do know the way that Rassing completely embrace their Parisian spirit. Well, that's exactly what Doncaster need to do. All of that sort of stuff. All of it.
Get a Doncaster cow pie.
Yeah, perfect.
Some great rugby clubs in Yorkshire, by the way.
Yeah,
there is. Talking of great rugby clubs in Yorkshire, I think that Huddersfield... Did I say Huddersfield beat Harrogate at the start of the show?
No, but you said Blackburn beat York.
Blackburn beat York. I don't know how Albion went on. Do you want to find
they
out?
Won.
Did they? Against
they won. I don't know who against, but I know they won.
Broughton Park beat Ultram Kersal. Sedgley had a very good win, I think.
Yeah, big win for Sedgley.
Oh, Chester!
Yes.
They gave Chester an absolute beating. This weekend. Yeah, said very, very good on front football and some monstrous forwards. Very well organised. Where have they got the forwards from? Why don't you know this?
There's a few old boys still playing, but I don't know. Just harvesting the Northwest other clubs' talent.
Classic Sedgley. Is the big South African still playing?
No, Krause.
What's he now? 46?
Well, it depends which one you mean. Krause. There's been a few big South Africans over the years. Faree.
Laurie Faree?
No, Tim Faree. Tim Faree.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Big South African was DOR. God, he was probably 40 when I was still playing.
Sedgley Truck has hung up his boots now.
Has he?
I think, did he announce it like 2 years ago?
No.
On Twitter, I'm sure he did.
No, Matt Riley.
Yeah.
No chance.
He's still playing.
He's definitely still playing.
Is he?
He's their goal kicker.
Is he?
Yeah.
I'm sure he retired.
He does kick.
I'm sure I've seen his name down in conversions of pens.
He does kick. I think Stevie Collins, Piggy will still be kicking mostly, but I could be wrong on that.
Games next weekend. What we got?
Next week's games, Friday the 3rd. We have Gloucester hosting Bristol.
Oh.
Gloucester
at home.
Give me Gloucester.
Wow.
So, Saturday, I'm going to read this in reverse order from what I'm seeing it in. So, all 3 o'clock kickoffs, we've got Worcester hosting Wasps, a Midlands derby.
Tough one, that. I'm going to go for Wasps. Worcester at home, I can see winning. I'll see the teams first, but Wasps.
Give me Wasps. Then, Northampton hosting Bath. This is a nice game for Bath, but Northampton are going to win.
Yeah, Saints.
Bath need to get something. They need to be able to tell themselves a story after this.
I think Bath can actually win that game.
I think they can, but I don't think they will.
Did you see Ajomo's missed try? Ugh.
Which one was the Ajomo missed try?
He's got some skills, that kid.
Oh, he's so good, isn't he? Jonathan Joseph knocks it through. Outside the boot. Ajomo collects, tries to feed it inside, gives intercept to Stuart Hogg.
Yes.
Devastating.
Yeah. We then have London Irish versus Newcastle, which will be Irish
at home.
And then we have the much vaunted game that was billed as the cheats versus the racists. Exeter Chiefs host Saracens.
Give me the cheats.
I'm going to say the cheats as well.
I'm going to say the extra home.
It's at Sandy Park.
I'm going to go for the not cheats.
The not cheats.
Interesting.
Give me the cheats.
They're building towards European Cup because this is the last round of Prem games before a couple before of weeks European. Of Champions Cup.
I think Exeter are miles off European Cup. Believe you me, I think they're going to have a miserable European campaign.
I think I'm saying the not cheats in hope more than expectation.
Do you know what? Why don't they just go back to their old strategy of what is meant to be illegal now and just see if they get pinged for it?
Yeah, because like refs don't marshal feeding in the scrum.
It's illegal. There's a directive out there. Who cares? Yeah. We'll just do what we're going to do. And if you get pinged, they get pinged. I bet they don't get pinged in Europe with bloody Welsh refs and Scottish refs and all sorts of stuff.
I'm just looking for the fixtures in Europe. We're in this stupid two-pool system again.
Yeah.
Pool A and Pool B, but you only play a quarter of the teams from your pool.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I also hate it because I get less games to work on.
Yeah, that's pretty...
Because there's fewer game rounds.
Yes.
Did
either of you watch any of the T20 World Cup?
No, none of it.
No.
So I watched a few of the games, and I do like watching a bit of cricket, particularly international. I had absolutely no clue what was going on in the grouping, but it actually didn't really matter because when you're... I'm a casual fan towards cricket in the same way as many people are casual fans towards rugby.
Yeah.
And I could see that there were different tiers of pools, and then the big boys played in one pool and then the small boys played in another pool, and then if you're a good small boy, you got a right to play into the big boy pool, and then you got a right to go through to the final knockout stages. But I didn't need to understand any of it because all I was doing was watching for like the action, the last five overs of the second innings, because that's the only bit of the whole thing that counts.
I've got to say, T20 is exciting.
There's nothing quite like the conclusion of a five-day test match when it's on a razor's edge.
Agreed. Yeah,
but T20 gives you like it gives you 60 or 80% of that hit really easily.
Yes,
like really frequently.
So, do you remember when Holland beat England?
Yes,
I'm sure that was coincided with that was 12 years ago, wasn't it? Because that was when the Lions played South Africa last time round.
I remember. I also remember when England. Oh, that was a test match, though, wasn't it? When England lost to Zimbabwe, and it was a guy called something like Edo Brandis, and he was a pig farmer. And they always find those stories, don't they? Oh, I think England beaten by a pig farmer.
It's never completely genuine either. No. It's like, oh no, not the pig farmer. He worked on a pig farm prior to becoming a highly paid South African cricketer. You know, it's never quite what it seems.
England are due to tour the Netherlands in June 2022 to play 3 one-day internationals.
Wonderful stuff.
Wow. Anyway, we are definitely...
Yeah. Anyway, that's
getting off that's the topic.
We've taken some twists and turns and...
There's one last game which will be interesting, actually. Oh, on Sunday, Leicester Tigers host Harlequins.
Leicester Tigers.
Quins will have all their big guns back, though.
They will. Get them ready for match action in European
Cup. Leicester Tigers. I'm not going to go against Leicester Tigers until they give me a really good reason to do so.
At home, Leicester.
After a week off as well.
If it was at Quins, I'd say Quins.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. There we go.
I don't know if they've played this fixture yet, but I predict the first game that Leicester Tigers lose at Welford Road this year will be against London Irish, unless they've already played it.
Contact Ted Chase. Do you remember when London Irish got their first win at Welford Road in...
I do.
Yeah,
years and years. And Jeb Sinclair, we got him on the pod straight the next day.
Did your brother play that game?
Yeah, and he was absolutely steaming.
It was
a house of London Irish players, and he painted us a beautiful picture of just players that had a massive bender the night before.
So that phone call, the house full of rugby players was him, and it was Mikey Mayhew,
right?
He goes by the Great Dane. So, do you remember when we were put up for the podcast award in Leeds?
Do you remember when we were up for best sports podcast of the year alongside, can't remember.
Yeah, but it was the whole of Five Live.
Yeah, the whole of Five Live. Five Live and us.
Yeah, Five Live and us, right? Unfortunately, Five Live had the foresight to broadcast straight after a terrorist attack. And we don't cry enough on our podcast. So we never won it. So the so it literally said Egg Chasers, Tim Cocker, Phil Logg and Jonathan Beardmore. That was it. And then it was like Talk Sport crying, mental health on the sporting couch and crying, and then so they're like something to the London bombing. Like, we've got no chance here. Like, we've never had a terrorist atrocity that
it was nice to be nominated. There were thousands of sports radio shows on podcast that
had nothing to do with sport.
Our nomination did.
We're the only ones that we were there because of the content of what we did. Everyone else was there. Well, the BBC were there due to what a terrorist did, and that's the only reason they went.
You see, we need to think more strategically in future, because I have won those radio awards and I've been nominated many times for my radio shows.
And what do? You just jump in the car and go to the nearest crime scene? I mean,
how's it work? Well, I was going to say there were a few powerful moments in our audio, the ones that won awards and got us nominated.
Should we mix them up?
There were a few powerful moments. If you... next week's podcast... Guys, next week's podcast is going to be unmissable.
No, seriously, right? So... when you submit your award, right, and you're submitting it to a panel, none of which know anything about sport, they're all media types. So, like, they have no idea if what we're saying is true, they have no idea. So we could conduct an interview with an actor, fundamentally, about, something went through in his, in his childhood, we could get them to cry, and we could submit this. We could submit, like, a really strong, human interest story, and they'd be all over it.
Yeah,
they'd be all over that.
Yeah. But our listeners wouldn't be.
Well, it doesn't need to be part of the podcast. It just needs to be in that clip that we submit to the judges, right?
Well, if there's a podcast that we don't want you to listen to but is necessary for a night out at an awards bash, we'll let you know so you know which one to swerve.
We just make
a story. But don't swerve any of the podcasts. In fact, hit subscribe wherever you get yours. We're contactedchasers@gmail.com. Love getting your emails. Please do keep them coming. He's at Jay Beardmore. If you want the direct shortcut to the bigger... Yeah. And we're at Rugby Podcast. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.